Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Monday, January 14, 2019... Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome to the program. Welcome to a new era of the program. Now, this may look familiar because if you watched our New Year's show, you may have seen that we did it from this brand spanking new studio in Bristol, Connecticut. You may have thought that that was a one-off, but this is the future and the present, my friends. This is our new home. Each and every week, we'll be doing this show from this beautiful studio here in Bristol, and I'm very excited about that. That is one of several changes happening in my little world. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to do the show from a new studio, and I do believe that this is, I was thinking about this last night in the shower, the 13th different studio, either actual physical studio or studio look that I've had in the history of doing this program. 13! Now, of course, we're about to celebrate our 10-year anniversary in June, so it's almost, well, a little more than one a year. But I would say that this is the best. And so I'm very excited to have a new team working on the show in the back. It's going to be great. And of course, this is a big week for everyone here at ESPN. This is the culmination of many years, many months of hard work. This is the beginning of the very first UFC on ESPN Fight Week. In case you haven't heard, the UFC, its exclusive home here in the United States, is ESPN. And its very first card is this Saturday on ESPN Plus. It's Henry Cejudo versus TJ Dillashaw for the UFC flyweight title. This is just a taste of some of the things, some of the shows, some of the content that are coming your way over the next few days. The first one, perhaps the most exciting one for me personally, is that this little show, this little train that could, is going to be on television on a weekly basis. Every Tuesday night at midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific, on either ESPN News or ESPN2. For the most part, it will be on ESPN2, but because of the Australian Open for the first couple of weeks, it will be on ESPN News. A one-hour condensed version showing the highlights of this program will be on television. We made it! Our little train that could made it. The boyhood dream realized. This is what I always wanted. Everyone calls this show a podcast. It's not a podcast. It's a show. And now we're on TV. Not to slight the medium that we're on now, but this is very exciting. So that was the lineup over there. I'll go through it later. Also of note, I'll tell you later in the program how we will be checking off another bucket list item later on in the week. I'm very excited about that, but I'll tell you about that later in the program. We can run through the lineup, tell you everything that's going on. But yes, this Saturday, January 19th, UFC on ESPN Plus One. Although I don't like when they call it Plus One, because the first one, like, you don't call Back to the Future One. You just call it Back to the Future, right? On the poster, it just said Back to the Future or Jaws. It's just Jaws, not Jaws One. So the first one doesn't get a one, in my opinion. Anyway, it's Henry Cejudo versus TJ Dillashaw. We'll be talking about that card at length throughout the day. And we'll be talking to some of the people involved in that card. Of course, over the past few weeks, we've talked to some of the notable names like TJ, like Henry. We had them on the New Year's show. And last week, we spoke to Rachel Ostovich and Joanne Calderwood, Alex Hernandez. So we've got a lot going on the program. Let me run down today's lineup, and then we will get to our first guest of the day. I'm excited about this. So at 3:45 Eastern Time, we're going to be joined by Tyron Woodley, the UFC welterweight champion, the reigning defending UFC welterweight champion. Of course, you found out last week he will be fighting Kamaru Usman, not Colby Covington, on March 2nd in Las Vegas. We spoke to Colby last week. He was very upset. It was a sort of serious Colby. It was the Colby Covington version of the Shawn Michaels, I lost my smile. Remember that? If you're an old school pro wrestling fan, it was that Colby Covington. It was no MAGA. It was no Trump stuff. It was just Colby. And, I thought he had some interesting things to say. And, I thought he had a lot of good points. But in the end, he's not getting the title shot. It's Kamaru Usman. So we're going to talk to Tyron Woodley about all that, because we know that Woodley wanted the Covington fight. See how he feels about it all. At 3:25, we're going to be talking to Cody Garbrandt. Cody Garbrandt hasn't done a lot of media since he lost to TJ Dillashaw back in early August in Los Angeles. So I'm really excited about that. And of course, he's returning on that same card in March in Las Vegas against Pedro Munhoz. And also of note, he has fought TJ Dillashaw twice. You'll recall going into that second fight, he was the one saying that he would like to win the belt back and then drop down to 125. That opportunity now goes to TJ Dillashaw. Curious to see how he feels about it all. At 3:05, we're going to be joined by Derek Lewis, our old friend, the Black Beast, who you may recall gave me crap many a time that he couldn't see me, my new setup and whatnot. What's he going to say now? Look at me now, Derek. Look at me now. Now, Derek has gone a little Hollywood on us. It's been harder than usual to get him on the program, so I'm excited to talk to him. March 9th, he returns to action against JDS in beautiful Wichita, Kansas. That's the main event that was in announced early last week as well. Anthony Smith will stop by at 2:45. Of course, he meets John Jones in the main event of that card on March 2nd in Las Vegas. I'm looking forward to that. Kamaru Usman, the aforementioned, will stop by at 2:25, talk to him about getting the title shot and whatnot. We were supposed to be joined by Greg Hardy at 1:45. I got a call 10 minutes ago telling me that Greg Hardy will not be joining us at 1:45. I am as disappointed as all of you. I'm sure there are some of you who are probably happy that Greg Hardy isn't going to be on the program. So I'm sorry about that. I could probably explain a little more later, but for now I'll keep those thoughts to myself. Instead, we're going to be joined by friend of the program, Filthy Tom Lawler, who would never leave me hanging at the altar. A lot going on in his life. I'm excited to talk to Tom Lawler at 1:45. Eric Albarracin, the head coach for Henry Cejudo, will stop by at 1:25. He has a lot to get off his chest. He's mad at me that I didn't name him coach of the year, so I'm looking forward to that. But first, let us go to the brand spanking new Skype machine and say hello to our first guest of the day, the head coach for one TJ Dillashaw, the great Dwayne Bang Ludwig. Dwayne, how are you?
Doing good, sir. Doing good. How you doing?
It's great to have you on the show. You look great. What a great Skype connection you have over there. I really appreciate that. The beginning of a big week for you, so thank you very much for taking some time out of your schedule. I think the first question has to be this, because it's the question that I think everyone keeps talking about, asking me about. Every time it seems like TJ posts something on social media, I get people sending it to me like, look how he looks. Does he look healthy? Is he going to make weight? Everyone's worried. Everyone's concerned that this fight won't come to fruition. Could you tell us, how is he looking? How is he feeling as he makes the cut down to 125?
He's looking very sharp. His strength and conditioning coach, Sam Calavita, has him on track to make weight. He's strong. He's fast. The only differences that I've noticed in this camp is that he's getting faster. He seems just as strong. All the technique, the timing, the accuracy, that's all there. He's mentally sharp. He's focused. He's always focused, but I did have some concern if he would be a little bit weaker or not, and he is not. He is just faster. So with the dropping the weight, he's actually a lot better, just in speed-wise. The skill set, we always improve and gain more knowledge and so on, but there's no hiccups in this camp.
Could you tell us on this Monday morning over there how much he weighs?
I don't know right now. I'm in Colorado. He's in California. I'll see him later tonight, but he's been waking up the mid-30s. So
okay,
he's good.
And that's what you guys were hoping for?
Yes, sir. It's on track. Sam Calavita, the strength conditioning coach.
Yep.
That's what he's on track.
Okay. Any surprises along the way? Any roadblocks? Did it take, you know, was it hard early on to get over a certain hump as you started to make the way, you know, make the way down to 125? Anything surprise you that you didn't expect?
Nothing, no surprises. As TJ is a professional at his job in every aspect. There's no complaints. He does what he needs to do. And again, he feels strong and he's fast. So his strength conditioning with his coach is on point.
Obviously, this is the most crucial week. This is where the serious cutting happens. Do you have any concerns coming up this week? Are you a nervous Nelly? Are you anxious about this? How are you feeling heading into the week?
I feel fine. I think, according to his performances leading up to this point, he's been really sharp. So I don't have any concerns, really. There's no concerns out of the normal.
Okay. Is this something that as you've gone through the camp for the most part now, it's about to end, obviously. Is this something that you feel would be good for him to be a part of, you know, in the future? Do you want him to be a flyweight more so than a bantamweight? Do you feel like he's actually better as a flyweight, or do you like this as just a one-off?
We'll see his performance on the actual tonight, but I like it as to be a one-off. I wouldn't mind him sticking around at 35, and we'll see where the future holds and for other possibilities. But for now, a one-off. We've put a lot of time and focus into him cutting weight and making the weight. It hasn't been too big of a deal, but we have spent more time in that area than previously, obviously, because we're dropping the weight class. But it reminds me a little bit of when I was fighting, always focusing on the weight cut and how much I weigh before class, after class. I would just like to have more focus on our skill development rather than the weight cut. But again, it hasn't been too big of a concern.
Obviously, your main concern is the fight itself. Game planning, go out there and win. You don't necessarily have to care about all the extracurricular stuff. But he did say very early on in this process that he is being sent down to kill the flyweight division. Is that your understanding? Is Saturday night's title fight the final flyweight title fight based on what you know?
From what I understand, yes, it's supposed to be canceling the 125-pound division. I mean, I just heard interviews and internet stuff, right? I didn't talk to Dana or anybody at the UFC. So I'm not quite sure what's going on, but I just focus on what I can control, and that's getting my guys better as martial artists, and the bell sounds, we shall perform. So,
how do you feel about that? Do you think they should get rid of it?
Well, I'm not quite sure of the ratings on the TV show or on those fights or what the concern is. If it doesn't have enough traffic, then I guess pull it. But I don't know their market research for the 125-pound division to say yes or no. But I'd like for it to stick around. It's always been exciting. But we'll see what the future holds.
Let's just stay on the weight thing here for a second. I saw an interview recently. Did you say that at some point you'd like to see him go up to 145 to fight some, if it is Max Holloway, who's still the champion, that is something that you're interested in? You think that that's something that he could be, he could be good at, that he could actually pull off, get the third belt?
DJ can pull that off to go up to 145 pounds and get that title as well. I do believe that can happen.
Wow. I remember when Roy Jones went up, when he went too far up to heavyweight and then he went down, he said that all that movement, all that, changing of weight really screwed him up. Do you have a concern with that?
It would be a new field, a new venture.
Yeah.
I'm up for the challenges. So is TJ.
Right.
So have a triple champ. It'd be nice.
Yes. Now, this is not something
see what we're capable of. It doesn't make sense to stay in a rut. I mean, we're not in a rut, but – and there's still credible opponents at 135.
Right.
But to cement the legacy and see what our true potential is as a human being and a martial artist, why not test ourselves also at 145? But not to get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
Make sure we see on the task at hand, Henry Cejudo, who is not an easy fight for anybody. So I want to make sure we're focusing on that now, which we are. And after this fight, we'll talk about 145 or other possibilities.
Is that something that you'd like to see him try this year?
Yes.
Wow. But I'm assuming you want to see him go back to 135. If all goes well on Saturday, get back to 135, and then maybe after that, try out 145?
A fight at 135 is not bad. Who would you like to see him fight at 135?
I think
Ariel.
Please bring it. Bring it. No problem. I think there's a fight coming up, and timing wise it works. I think there's a fight coming up between Marlon Moraes and Rafael Sunsau that I feel like a lot of people, including myself, even though it hasn't been said, would consider a number one contender fight. So I feel like the winner of that deserves a shot at the belt next.
Moraes and Rafael Sunsau.
They did. Yep. They did.
Yeah. So that's not really, it'll be an exciting fight, hopefully, but it doesn't really stir the pot for me personally, but it's not about me. But I don't really see that as a big payday fight or an exciting fight. Any fight with TJ is an exciting fight, but a fight against Sensei again or Marias would be a good challenge, and not to overlook Sensei, but either of those fights don't really excite me, I guess.
Right. There is an obligation, though, as champion that,
Yeah, but TJ he's not just a regular champion. Like, he's something special.
Yeah.
He got to 25 and get that title and go up to 35. That's what I feel our journey should consist of, not staying at 35. And I don't want to discredit Sensei or Marias, but I just feel there's a little bit of a gap, and TJ is better suited at testing his skills in other departments.
Okay. And, of course, the Dominick Cruz issue, if you will.
I would like to have that fight, personally.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Although it seems like he's going to be out for quite a while, so not really something.
Hopefully he's doing good. That sucks, man. The thing, you make your money fighting, and well, he's on camera now, so hopefully he's doing good. But whatever beef, anyway, I don't want to see the guy hurt and want to make sure he's living a good life. But I would like to see that fight happen again.
Okay, now going to the actual fight itself, my colleague Chael, I thought, broke it down in a very interesting light. He said that he thinks that Henry Cejudo is the best amateur wrestler in MMA. However, he thinks that TJ Dillashaw has the best MMA wrestling in the sport. And I think some people might not understand the distinction, but I think that there is a very clear distinction between the two. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I mean, there's just different builds and rule sets, right? I mean, you box differently in a boxing match than you do in a kickboxing match versus a mixed martial art match. And the same thing goes for wrestling. I mean, there's Greco and there's freestyle. There's different forms of wrestling for that same fact. So wrestling in the Olympics under Greco or freestyle, wrestling in mixed martial arts is different. And TJ has had a lot more experience in that department. He's the best at expressing Bruce Lee's philosophies of flowing like water and tying the techniques together, hence mixed martial arts. He blends his striking and his wrestling together the best, in my opinion.
I feel like you should be made aware of this stipulation. They were on my show 2 weeks ago at the same time, and Henry threw out that if TJ takes him down once, the fight's over. He will tap out just from the takedown. No submission needed. Are you aware of this? And do you believe that this is a thing? If you guys score a takedown in the first minute, you won. You get the belt. He said it. It's on the record. It's on TV.
Yeah, but Henry doesn't run the show, right? I don't think that's fair to the fans. I think they want to see Henry get punched in the face a couple times. So we'll see how this goes first.
Is that something, though, you're going to try to look to do? Put the wrestler down?
Out-wrestle him. He's going to out-wrestle him more than once. I don't – we can take Cejudo down. That can happen. Will we be able to hold him down? We'll see. I see this TJ taking him down a couple times. He's going to take him down. That's going to happen.
What about Henry's improved striking? That's your background, right? You know that. What do you make of it?
I think he's doing really good since his I've been watching his career, and as it went on, he'd be really good at when he was training in California, and now he's back down in Arizona. He seems to be making strides. I mean, he is. I mean, he's a world-class athlete. He has no choice but to get better. His work ethic is for sure. I'm second to none. That's just what happens when you have a dedicated, world-class, coordinated, hardworking athlete. You give them the basics in any athletic endeavor, and they'll excel. That's just how it is with TJ. That's just how it is with anybody, any top 10 athlete. So I am impressed with his striking. He is not to be taken lightly at all. He is strong, takes a good shot. His game, obviously a solid wrestling, really good control. His fight with Demetrius, I don't think he actually won that fight. It was a pretty boring fight. He just took him down and held him. He didn't win. Like, if it was an actual fight, he didn't win the fight. He just took him down and held him. Like, that's not fighting to me. That's loving somebody a little too much.
Wow, that's interesting. You thought it was a boring fight. I found it to be a fascinating fight.
I did not. It was just Henry was just pushing the pace and getting a hold of him and trying to hold him down. It wasn't an action-packed fight in my eyes.
And did you score it for him at least?
I did not score for
him. Wow.
I scored it for Demetrius. Two.
Okay. So this is going to be a walk in the park for you guys.
It was not going to be a walk in the park. We got to respect him for sure. But the fight that I would like to see, I wish it was TJ and Demetrius.
Right.
That fight needs to happen. If TJ was to stick around at 25, I'd like to see Demetrius come back from 1FC or go fight at 1FC, make some kind of super fight like that happen between TJ and Demetrius. For the fans, for mixed martial arts, for the evolutionary period of martial arts in a whole, that fight needs to happen. So I really like to make that happen.
So despite what happened in August, you still consider Demetrius to be the best 125er?
Yes, for sure.
Okay.
How about you?
I scored it. It was a very close fight. I don't remember the breakdown now in terms of rounds, but I did score it in favor of Henry ever so slightly. And honestly, it was one of my fights of the year. I thought it was fascinating theater. Like, to see it went down essentially to the final minute, if my memory serves me correct. And to see him take down DJ, who I think has very good wrestling, good takedown defense. No?
don't credit takedowns as winning a fight. It's like just playing the rules. It's kind of a just a, I just don't, as a martial artist and you're fighting, like I'm not taking down and holding you. That's like you're subduing a subject and waiting for the cops to come. You're just holding him until someone comes to save you. It's kind of a weak way to win, but it's wrestling is the rules. I get it, but don't really like it.
Considering TJ's last few fights, his last few opponents, where would you rank what Henry brings to the table? Where would you put him among the, you know, the Codys of the world, the Dominics of the world, the John Linekers of the world, in terms of what he brings to the table, the puzzle that Henry Cejudo is?
He's solid. I give TJ an A+. If you give him, as far as ranking them, he'd be an A+. Cejudo's an A-. He's up there. He's solid. Demetrius is an A+ as well. I'd give Cody an A- also. There's just gaps in there. But when Cody fought Dominic Cruz, Cody was performing. He had on night, an A+ night.
Yeah.
You know, we can perform great some nights and not so great other nights. And that night, Cruz performed on a B+ level. He just, it wasn't his night, and it was Cody's night. So I would like to see that fight again, Cody and Dominic Cruz. But I also like to see TJ fight Demetrius and TJ fight Cruz one more time as well.
Yeah, okay. We are getting TJ versus Henry Cejudo. I think one of the obviously big questions going into this fight is how he looks on the scale, but then how he performs. Are we seeing is it possible we see a different TJ Dillashaw on Saturday, or do you think come Saturday, once he rehydrates, it's the same guy that fights at 135?
Well, he's never the same guy. He's always improving.
Fair.
A faster, more improved version of TJ Dillashaw. And in my opinion, again, speaking evolutionary-wise, with the amount of information that we have now, TJ is the best mixed martial artist to step foot in the cage.
Okay.
He has the most well-rounded skill set in all departments.
He's pound for pound number one.
In my eyes, for sure.
Yeah. And this must be...
biased, but
hey, you should say
that.
That's
my nature.
That's your guy. You should say that. More people should say that. But I would imagine for you personally going into, not a lot of drama. This must be nice, right? There's no soap opera stuff, no real, I mean, there's a little bit of back and forth between them, but you're not really involved, right? Isn't this good?
So this is good. And this is always what we focused on anyway, what we could control and getting better inside the dojo and improving and getting better. And, you know, it's a commitment to constant, never ending improvement toward black belt excellence. That's what we're doing. And that's what people should do. So, just mind your business, stick your head in the sand, and focus on what you can control. And that's what we did. And look at the results. Look where TJ's at.
And what did you do throughout the camp? Did you go to California? Did he come to you? Did you split time?
He's in California. I've been splitting time, going out there 3 days a week. I actually leave after this, flying back out there for a day, and then we go to New York. But I've been splitting time between Colorado and California.
How's that go? Do you like that?
I love it. We have a really good training schedule that has proved to be successful for his retention of the information. As far as with the idea of how to get somebody better, we've been focused on a really good schedule that just seems to be clicking with him. He always gets better anyway. We're having these three intense days, and then him using the other 3 days for strength and conditioning, his jiu-jitsu and wrestling. It seems to have worked out better this way rather than doing kickboxing one day, jiu-jitsu and the wrestling, and the kickboxing again, jiu-jitsu and wrestling. 3 days dedicated on striking. Well, it's not just striking. It's striking for mixed martial arts, just like we do wrestling for mixed martial arts. But we do a solid pad session. We do a sparring session. We go back on the pads in another class. So that schedule has proven to be really, really good, I guess I should say, for us.
What's the official Bang Ludwig prediction? How does it end?
TJ can stop him in the second round. TJ can stop him anywhere. But I don't want to overlook Cejudo, and I don't want to pursue the knockout. We just need to flow and adapt like water, like Bruce Lee says, right? So that's what TJ does. He's Bruce Lee's philosophies come to life when TJ fights. And that's why TJ has the possibility to end Cejudo in any round. But I want to shut the brain off and flow and let him have fun and enjoy the energy of the crowd and go out there and perform and show off.
I'm looking forward to it. Best of luck to you. Safe travels to California and then, of course, to New York. Looking forward to seeing you out there. This is going to be great. What a great fight. What a great story heading into this fight. Thank you for the time, as always, Bang. And again, good luck to you guys.
Appreciate it.
All right. There he is. Head coach for one TJ Dillashaw, the great Bang Ludwig, of course, former UFC fighter, longtime MMA fighter, now in TJ's corner. What a fascinating story heading into this fight. And if I'm being honest, I think it has been underpromoted. A division is on the line on Saturday, an actual division. Forget about the belt. Forget about TJ making history, being a champ, if you will, double champ. An actual division is on the line. Henry and his team believe that if they lose this fight, the flyweight division is no more. Henry and his team believe if they win this fight, the flyweight division remains. If you are currently under contract as a UFC flyweight, you need to be rooting for Henry Cejudo. I am not making this up. This is what they have told me time and again, and we're about to talk to Henry's coach here in a matter of seconds. This is what they have told me time and again. They believe, they have been told that they are fighting for the future of the division. That is a massive deal. You want to talk about stakes? They don't get bigger than that. Given that, you can make a strong case that Henry Cejudo versus TJ Dillashaw, and I'm not just saying this, I could not care less where this fight airs. This could be the most important fight in UFC history in the sense of stakes. The actual stakes, a division is on the line. When has that ever happened? When has that ever happened in MMA? And I believe it. If you shut down this division with Henry Cejudo as champion, Henry Cejudo defeating TJ Dillashaw on Saturday, that is a massive blunder. Henry Cejudo has come into his own. Henry Cejudo is a star. Henry Cejudo is not just a star, he is a budding star. He is someone who is about to become an even bigger star. Henry Cejudo is an Olympic gold medalist. He is charismatic. He is fun. He is a great fighter. I don't know if you saw the photo that I shared over the weekend. He is in phenomenal shape. He speaks multiple languages, English, Spanish, Portuguese. He represented this country. He was on the top of the podium. You can't beat this. Okay. The first 5 years of this division, they weren't selling like hotcakes, right? That old term. I don't know where the hotcakes thing came from. Like, where do you actually get hotcakes? I don't know. But you know the term. It's a fresh coat of paint now. There's a new face. There's a new guy. There's a new star. You're going to shut that down, especially if he beats TJ Dillashaw. He is fighting for the division. Come out and say it. Come out and promote it as such. The division is on the line on Saturday. You know how big that is? I've never heard that before. I've never seen that before. There has never been a stipulation like that before. That's a big freaking deal. Now, if TJ Dillashaw wins, where do you go from there? Now, there's enough bantamweights out there where I really truly don't feel like it is fair. Like, this idea of fighting Max is fun and all, but I mean, come on, with Marlon Moraes out there, with Rafael Sunsa out there, with John Lineker out there, you know, with all those guys, and there are more Dominic Cruz once he comes back. There's enough guys out there that you should probably be, you know, a fighting champion, if you will. So if TJ wins, okay, I'm on board. It doesn't really make sense anymore. And as you probably have noticed, one by one, they've been getting rid of some of these flyweights. They're essentially giving you an option. If you won your last fight, you can move up to 135. If you lost, you're probably done. And so it's almost like the Survivor Series thing now where people are getting, you know, knocked off as the time goes on. And so the stakes are phenomenal. The story is phenomenal. I just want to see it built up a little more. So in a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by Eric Albarracin, who was pushing very much to be the coach of the year. And he had a very strong case. He had Henry Cejudo, of course, who had the big win over Demetrius Johnson in August. He's got the Pitbull brothers. He's got Paulo Costa. He's got a great squad, a great stable. We're going to talk to him about the stakes, about what's on the line on Saturday. He is in New York, I believe, as we speak. So we'll talk to him. A quick recap of what's to come this week on the ESPN family of networks. My show on ESPN News, this show on ESPN News, 12 a.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on Tuesday night / Wednesday morning. We've got Ariel the Bad Guy, me and Chael and I, better English, on ESPN Plus. That is Wednesday night, comes out at around 8 p.m. Eastern. Friday, we've got the Ariel and the Bad Guy official weigh-in show on ESPN Plus. That's the new home for it. And then the UFC pre-fight show on ESPN Plus at 8 p.m. The weigh-in show is at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Saturday, as you see right over there, there's a special Ariel the Bad Guy pre-fight show live on Twitter and YouTube beginning at 5 p.m. But my friends, let me tell you that at 4 p.m. that day, Eastern Time, I will be live on ESPN Radio nationally with a pre-fight show. Our radio debut. This is a big deal. I'll tell you more about that in a moment, but mark it on your calendar. Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern, live on ESPN Radio. Now, the man who has molded Henry Cejudo into the fighter that he is, the man who has been by his side throughout this UFC run, the man who essentially convinced Henry Cejudo to remain in MMA after he had that weight issue at UFC 177 is our next guest. He is known as Captain Eric. He is the man who introduced Daniel Cormier to his future wife. He is the one and only Eric Albarracin. Eric, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, but I'm not the man who has convinced you enough to get that award for Coach of the Year. So I'd like to rename your show from 2018 as the Ariel Helwani Brown Nose Award.
Wow.
Yeah, because I know you're friends with DC. You guys worked on Fox together. And maybe he consoled you. You cried on his shoulder when you guys when you left there. But DC's my boy. I'm glad, you know, he got Fight of the Year. But I just thought that, you know, my fighters did the impossible by beating, you know, Demetrius Johnson, the greatest fighter of all time, the GOAT, the flyweight king, the guy who he had lost to. He had to overcome that adversity, come back and win it all. And, you know, I just think that my fighters performed at a little bit higher against a little bit higher level of opponent than you know, the other coaches and the other fighters. So guys like Patricio Pitbull, the winningest fighter in history, Patricky, the knockout king of Bellator, Bohashina, all those guys did awesome this year. 2017, you nominated me, and I made it a big point for 2018 to be a stellar year, and my guys did everything they asked about them. And you still dissed him, Ariel Helwani.
Wow. You see, this is what I love about you, Eric. No beating around the bush. You address the elephant in the room right off the bat. I like it. Bring it. I deserve it. Look, I appreciated how much you wanted this. I appreciate how much it meant to you. I appreciate all the campaigning. In the end, I felt like DC making history, Khabib beating Iaquinta and McGregor, and then the other fighters, I felt like it gave him a slight nod. But we're splitting here. I appreciate you were mad at me. And to be honest, I didn't think that you would come on the show. I thought that you were going to tell me to take a hike. So it's good to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me, but no, I wouldn't say take a hike. You know, I still respect you. You helped me get that fight. You're one of the only, I feel like me and you have something together like Muhammad Ali, even though I'm not a fighter, I'm the coach. Muhammad Ali had with his journalist.
Howard Cosell?
Howard Cosell, yeah.
How so?
Henry Cejudo, you and Howard Cosell, you guys are tight. I'm tight with Cejudo, so I thought we had something going, but I guess not.
You were mad. I reached out to you afterwards. You gave me like a one-word answer. You were really pissed at me, right?
Hell yeah, I was.
Damn, I'm sorry.
Well, you know why?
Why?
You know why? Because I think you knew the whole time, and those guys made videos and sent them from different locations. I was like, oh, they already knew. They kept us hanging, at least who was the coach or fighter of the year, when you guys had already had those pre-made videos made. So I was like, man. My fighters were over there pumping it up. You know, one of my fighters even, you know, posted videos of DC and Khabib saying, hey, Henry's the greatest fighter of all time.
Yeah.
Henry's better than what I've done because he got the gold medal. Henry's got two. And Khabib said he's the greatest fighter of all time. DC bowed down and said, hey, now he's got that big gold, the Olympic gold. So just that. So, you know what? That just motivates a coach like me. 2019, we're gonna break the mold. We're coming from it all. You know, Henry's about to beat TJ on January 19th. He's about to skin the snake. We got Patricio's gonna continue his featherweight reign. Patricky Pitbull's gonna be the, flyweight king. I mean, lightweight king. And you know, Bohashina, 2019 could be another breakout year for him. Maybe he gets that title.
Okay.
So that we could have four titles across the board. So that's my plan. Really not. I just give the credit to the fighters. I just want the team of the year. As long as they're producing, then that's what I'm about. Then I'm having fun.
Listen, you do all that. 2019 is in the bag for you, man. I mean, I might as well just put. I have the trophy right over here. I'll just put your name right on the bad boy. If you do all that, you have my word. You win it. Okay. Now let me ask you. Let's move past it. Now let's be friends for a second. I just went on this whole rant before we got you on the show, and I believe Henry wins on Saturday. The flyweights remain. He keeps the division around. He saves the division. I'm not playing Dana White here. I have no dog in this race. But I believe if he loses, they close up shop. I believe it's those kinds of stakes. I believe in many respects, this is the most important fight in UFC history. Am I crazy here, or do you believe it's the same stakes going into this fight on Saturday?
No, we do believe it. We've been training like that, you know, ever since, you know, Dwayne Bang and PJ said they're coming down to kill the division. We said no. They're trying to make us extinct, but flyweights, they don't die, they multiply. You know, I never liked the way they said that. You know, these guys got jobs on the line. These flyweights, it's a super weight to me. I think of the flyweight division like the lightweight division, 155, because to go to 170, it's a 15-pound jump. So I think the flyweight division has everybody from 100 pounds to 150 all cut to 125. You know, if you're 145 pounds, you're fighting 125. Look at TJ right now; he's coming from probably 150, 155. So it is a super fight division, and that's why it's so intense. They never gave they never put 40 fighters in the division so somebody could build a 5, 6, 7 fight winning streak. They put 10 studs and 15 world championship killers where nobody can get, you know, two, three fights, you're already fighting for a title. So, you know, they never really gave the time of day to the division, but now you got a new flyweight king. You got a kid that can speak three different languages. Henry Cejudo can carry this weight. Henry Cejudo can be the face of the UFC. And when he's at its best, when it counts, you know, the last fight, he was, you know, he had a chip on his shoulder, and I thought that's why he won. You know, he had never lost before, and finally when he lost, he got that chip on the shoulder, and that was a big motivator in coming back for that revenge against DJ. But now he's fighting with compassion. He's fighting with passion and purpose, and he fights best when it counts the most. He loves these high-intense combat moments, and he can raise his game when the pressure is on.
Have you seen?
We're gonna save the division, and at the same time, we're gonna skin the snake and bring down Bang Muay Thai. Think you coming down to take our division? We're gonna bring that whole system to the ground.
Wow!
I'll come. You're talking about, you know, Dwayne Banks talking. He could. You're talking about wrestling. Henry's wrestling or TJ's wrestling's better than Henry's? Are you out of your mind? He's crazy. He could stick to striking. You know, the system's. You know, I've had his system at our gym before. We actually had his system, but you know, just like he caused confusion at. When he went to Team Alpha Male, it kind of caused confusion with us. You know, when he thought that Henry might fight TJ, he canceled his Bang Muay Thai system on us. So we had our, you know, our workers come to work on Monday, try to log in his system, August 7th, August 6th, 2 days after the fight, and he wouldn't let them in the system.
No way. So, really?
Yeah. So we got a little, you know, I didn't really appreciate that. I didn't appreciate, you know, him, when they got that gift when we fought Benavidez. So I got a little beef with that. I want a little bit of revenge there.
Man, now I wish that I had you on the show first so that I could ask him about this. Cause we just had him on, but I didn't know about that. You never told me about that.
Yeah, he's, he was on Tough 24. He was kind of trying to bully Henry on Tough 24. He wouldn't let Henry come to open workouts because he didn't want Henry to see his system and how he befriended our team and then invited his team, our team, to his open workout, but wouldn't allow Henry to show up, kind of like causing division between the team. And he's done that at other places. So I was like, you know what? if he won't let us see his system, I'm big enough to go above him, and we'll buy his system at our gym. So we've seen his system at our gym for a while. We've been an affiliate. And then he cut us off. So yeah, that's how I feel. He shouldn't be talking about TJ's wrestling better than Henry. He's out of his mind. His way. We've been watching his tapes. You know, what TJ, you know, TJ's great. TJ's smart. But he leaves patterns like everybody else. Everybody else. And Dwayne Begg is, you know, he's pretty good at detecting these patterns. But, you know, you got to question the mental clarity of this coach who agrees of his fighter cutting down to 125 pounds, and then you think he's going to blow it up like a carnival balloon to 145 pounds. That's unfocused, man. You know, he thinks he's only got one fighter. Where's his other fighters? You know, he's trying to ride this one fighter and live vicariously through him, ride him at 125, he's going to win at 25, he's going to defend at 35, he's going to go up to 145 and fight Max Holloway. Who does he think? What does he have, the infinity glove on? Who is he in his mind? Thanos? You know what I'm saying? Dwayne's got to stop letting his fighters fight. Comic book, there's only one superhero here, that's Captain America.
You see, this is why I've been saying for a while that there needs to be a coach's press conference before title fights. Like, I want to see you and Bang up there on Thursday afternoon going head to head, going toe to toe, mano a mano. This would be great. This is another element to sell the fight. Please go ahead.
And instead of them coming down and trying to get our belt, Dwayne and company, you should be worried about us trying to get your belt, because that's what's next on the line. We're not, and the belt is just an accessory. We're not even about belts. We're about creating a legacy.
Have you been told that if Henry wins, he gets an immediate bantamweight title shot?
Well, no, we haven't been told that. But hell, that's more like a rematch for TJ. We might not even give him a rematch. Who knows what's going to happen?
Okay,
I'm saying if.
So let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Eric. Have you seen the photos of TJ? A lot of people are concerned. I see every time you post something, I get a bunch of people sending to me on Twitter, look how he looks. He looks like death. He looks sunken in. Dwayne just assured us that all is well, that he's in the low, low, low 130s. What do you make of how he looks? You've been around the sport for a long time. You've been around weight cutting a long time. What do you make of how he looks?
I think he looks fine. I think he looks like someone who's cutting a lot of weight. You know, but he's a professional.
Yeah.
He wrestled in college. He made weight every weekend, I'm sure. And he's always had to cut weight. That's just the life of a wrestler and a athlete in a competitive combat sport. So I don't see I don't make anything of it. We're preparing for the best. TJ Dillashaw available. You know, Henry's in his prime. TJ's in his prime. I mean, to me, this is the super fight of the year. You know, 2018, the super fight was, you know, maybe Khabib and Conor McGregor, but to me that was a mismatch because Conor had been coming off 2 years and he's coming off a boxing match, but that's, you know, you're going against a pure dominant grappler. That's a complete mismatch. These two, but they're both complete MMA fighters. This is the super fight. This is the title for, this is the legacy fight. This is who's pound for pound best fighter on the planet.
Eric, as you head into this fight, are there any concerns that he doesn't make weight? And have you been told, if he doesn't make weight, TJ that is, that Joseph Benavidez is going to be fighting Henry? In other words, is Henry fighting regardless on Saturday? Have you guys been told of the plan?
Yeah, I think we're fighting regardless. I don't care. Shit, we'll take...
Well, like if TJ doesn't make weight,
150 pounds.
If TJ doesn't make weight, do you still want that fight, or do you want to defend the title on Saturday and then, you know, fight?
I'll tell you what, if TJ don't make weight, he better put his belt on the line. He thinks he wants to come down and take Henry's gold medal off his neck. If he don't make weight, he better put his belt on the line, because the last time I saw, the bantamweight said 126 to 135.
Wow.
So if he's 126, put your belt on the line. We're ready. We're recovered. You know, Henry's never been in better shape. I've never seen him stronger. I've never seen him this fast, this powerful. His takedowns, his striking, his jiu-jitsu, everything's come together. I think even even the move up has actually helped us, because the move up from Anaheim to New York, Brooklyn, is actually, I figured it out, it's actually better.
Why is that?
The 6 week, because you know what? In 6 weeks, it just seems like Henry didn't get any injuries. You know, on an 8 week camp, right around the 6 weeks is where the injuries happen. You know, fortunately, Lee, we've been using high fall extracts, CBD, and there really has not been any injuries at all. And so the CBD after practice and CBD, any injuries that pop up, his knees, ankles, back, shoulder, whatever, we automatically rubbing that CBD on it. So we kind of been injury free this entire camp. And I've noticed that in the 6 weeks, we don't get those big injuries like we normally would in an 8 to 10 to 12 week camp. So I think the recovery is super important. The CBD we've been using has been actually making a huge difference.
What do you make of this narrative that I just shared with Dwayne? I heard my colleague Chael Sonnen say this. Henry Cejudo has the best amateur wrestling in MMA, but TJ Dillashaw is the best MMA wrestler in the sport. What do you make of that?
What do I make? Let me see. Well, you know what? I heard what Chael said, but I also heard what Dwayne Bang Ludwig said. And I'd rather, you know, Chael's my boy, you know, we go way back. I got a better question. When you asked Dwayne Ludwig that question, I want to ask Dwayne, how many Olympic champions has he coached? I'll wait for the answer.
Well, okay.
Okay. Well, then let me ask you this.
Yes.
How many greatest pound for pound fighters on the planet has he beaten?
Okay.
Yeah, I hear crickets. So what I'm saying is, you know, I've had he's talking about wrestling and how Henry's wrestling. Listen, he doesn't have to worry. There's nothing that TJ can do for Henry's wrestling. His MMA wrestling's not better. It's not going to be just wrestling. It's obviously MMA. I've game planned Henry for Demetrius Johnson. We've been together since the Olympics. You know, they can't compare to what the game planning that we're preparing for him.
You were there when Henry threw out the thing, the stipulation: if he takes me down once, the fight is over. Do you buy this? Do you buy that one takedown and he's done? You were standing right there, I believe, right when he said it.
I believe I was there. Yeah, I think you know, forget about the takedown. What happens when we knock him out? You guys are worried about takedowns. They're worried about takedowns. We're looking to knock him out. What if we submit him? How about that? Why don't we ask Dwayne Bang Ludwig, what is he going to do if Henry head kicks TJ's head off?
Early? You expecting this? I feel like we should have had you know how we had TJ and Henry on a couple weeks ago? We should have had both of you on at the same time. Massive mistake on my part.
Yeah, you might not get 2019 Journalist of the Year then.
Oh man!
If I'm in charge, I'll give it to someone else. Let you see how it feels.
We used to be so tight, Eric. We used to be boys. You were my guy. You were the one who went up to me in 2000. Well, I don't even remember when it was, 2012.
2011.
Yoel Romero. Although I must say, he never got the belt, so your prediction didn't come true, but you wrote his name down on a piece of paper and you said, this man will be, we've gone that far back. And now you're turning on me because I didn't give you the award. There's a whole committee of people. Yes, go ahead.
Hey, we go all the way back to Betsy Correa getting a Ronda.
Yes.
Ronda title shot against Ronda Rousey. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
But apparently you and DC are tight.
No, that's not it. That's not it. That's absolutely not it.
You and DC.
This was my olive branch.
You know, Henry, come on. Henry, you know, when Chris Weidman got, you know, beat Anderson.
Yeah.
You know, that was huge. Everybody called him Fighter of the Year.
Yeah.
No, there's nobody else that could come in and take that.
Yeah.
What's the difference when Henry beats Demetrius Johnson? Nobody should be able to take that. You can't beat. You know, you love DC, but you guys did a promo about Dan the Beast. The Beast, Lewis.
Yes, yes, yes.
How he said, oh, I'm not ready for a title shot.
Yeah.
And then 3 weeks later, he got a title shot.
Yeah.
So you guys did that promo of the year, but that's kind of making fun of it. But then that actually gave DC Fighter of the Year when, you know, I think DC has even said Henry should have been, or Henry's accomplishment is greater.
Fair enough. All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. Are we sort of friends?
No, no more brown nosing.
Okay.
If you need some CBD to, you know, correct some of the inflammation on your nose, I can bring down the inflammation, High Falls extracts, and we'll be good.
All right. I wish you the best, Eric. Best to you and the team.
Hey.
Enjoy New York. Good luck as you make your way down to 125 as well. By the way, how much does he weigh right now? Do you know? Right this second.
Yeah, he's 135.
Okay.
He's right on track. He's right on track. We're usually... For Demetrius Johnson, we were 9 over the day before weighing, so he's right on track. You know, Henry's never looked better, and I think Henry's going to shock the world. I think, you know, I think this is a great opportunity on ESPN Plus for the UFC to debut with the new face of the UFC, Henry Cejudo. I think it's going to be awesome.
The man
and
who will save the flyweights.
I would never miss this super fight.
Yes.
Nobody missed this super fight. Because this is the true fight for legacy. This is the true pound-for-pound fight. This is the true test for who's the best pound-for-pound fighter on the planet.
Much love to you, Eric. I'll see you later in the week. Best of luck to you guys. Thanks for doing this. I'm happy that we were able to sort of squash the beef here this afternoon.
Okay, it's not squashed yet. We'll see come December.
All right, fair enough. There he is, Eric Albarracin, head coach for one, Henry Cejudo. The card is Saturday. It's on ESPN Plus. It's prelims on ESPN Plus. There it is, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern time. Then you got the middle prelims on actual ESPN. So that's historic. Forget about February 17th. This Saturday, it's going on the mothership. And the headliner, of course, is Alex Hernandez versus Donald Cerrone. And then the main card, 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus. Main event is Henry Cejudo versus TJ Dillashaw. There's pre and post fight shows surrounding all of that. Download the app right now. Okay, let's move along to our next guest. We spoke about him a couple months ago. His name came up again late last month with the whole John Jones situation. Wanted to catch up with a longtime friend of the program, Tom Lawler, Filthy Tom to be exact. He joins us now via the magic of Skype. There he is. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great, Ariel. How are you?
What's going on? Do we have longer hair? What's happening here?
Yes, I have very long hair. Actually, it's in a ponytail tied back right now. Unfortunately, due to the time change or time difference, it's early here, and I didn't have time to prepare myself to my usual standard. But, Ariel, let me tell you this.
Okay.
You just mentioned the UFC on ESPN and ESPN Plus coming up this upcoming Saturday.
Yes.
Well, I would like to tell you
to
tune in to UFC Fight Pass before you tune in to ESPN Plus, because I will be doing commentary for the UFC Fight Pass debut of CES MMA 54 coming at you from Twin River Casino in Rhode Island.
Wow. Okay. And what time is this at?
It's actually a very early start, 3 p.m. Eastern.
Perfect.
On Fight Pass, a 2 p.m. matinee start if you are there in Rhode Island. Some of the top professional athletes in mixed martial arts compete in CES MMA. They've had Olympic caliber wrestlers. We've had CES champions go straight to the UFC and defeat former champions, with Andre Ewell taking on Hannon Barrow. There's been a number of fighters make their way into the UFC and to the top MMA organizations across the world. So tune in and you'll see some great action.
I like it. So if you want to start your day a little early, you can watch that and then roll right into the ESPN Plus card. Now, you're doing the color for that card. Is this your first time doing that?
It's not my first time. I worked for some promotions previously in Florida years and years ago. But this is my first foray back into the mixed martial arts commentary booth. I have been doing some for professional wrestling here and there. So it's not as if I'm a foreign participant, but it's something new and exciting for me to be on UFC Fight Pass and with a great company like CES. So
that's great. Congratulations on that. Okay, so that's
Saturday
at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Definitely make note of that. Okay, so there's a lot that I want to talk to you about. Of course, the last time we saw you in action was against Deron Wynn at the very first and maybe the last Golden Boy MMA show. Didn't go your way. It was a long layoff for you. Looking back, a month or so later, month and a half, what went wrong that night?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that there's anything that necessarily went wrong. I don't know that on any day I beat Deron Wynn. Maybe tomorrow I, you know, submit him in 10 seconds. Maybe he knocks me out in the first minute. You know, there's so many different aspects that went into this fight coming off a 2-year layoff. It was very emotional for me coming back from, USADA suspension, which I still contend. And now watching these highlights, it looks way worse for me than I remember, but.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. So, you know, hey, maybe Deron Wynn's just the better fighter on any day. Maybe 5 years ago, I would have been better than him. Maybe on, you know, November 25th, I would have beaten him. It's very tough for me to say at this point. I didn't get a whole lot. There's more questions I have coming out of the fight than answers, I guess.
Questions about yourself?
Yeah, questions about myself, where I stand in the sport, what I can and can't do, what I'm capable of doing and what I'm capable of not doing. Personally, myself, I didn't get into MMA with the idea of being a really tough guy and being able to take a beating and having a somewhat mediocre record. So, when I got to the back there, it was kind of a tough pill to swallow, you know. I don't know if this means I'm always going to be the type of fighter who is kind of, you know, knocking on the door and just a gatekeeper. I don't know if this was just a bad night coming back for me, or I don't know if this was me at my best and Deron Wynn's just that much better. I have no real answer to that. So, well, I guess I'll have to find out again.
Okay, so, and I will get to that in a second. Some people strongly believe in cage rust, others don't. Do you feel, looking back, like the layoff played a huge factor in the way you fought?
I felt okay in there. I didn't feel out of place. I didn't feel as if, when I had the opportunities to try to pull the trigger, I tried to. It was a very tough matchup, especially on kind of a short notice, like a month out. I was informed I'd be fighting him, but it's very tough to get high level wrestlers that are at that caliber and that are really that height. So, you know, it's very tough for me to say like what to take from the fight. I don't think that I sucked out there. Let me put it that way. You know, I outlanded him if you look at the amount of strikes. But he was in my face the whole time, and it's kind of a style that I've tried to employ in fights past and lost decisions using that same style. And I tried to do the opposite in reverse, and it didn't work for me this time. So.
And Deron Wynn is really good.
Ariel?
Well, I was just about to say, I did watch the fight. I thought it was the best fight on the card. I was just going to say, Deron Wynn is really good. There's a reason why people call him Mini DC. DC has taken him under his wing. I don't think he should continue fighting at light heavyweight. It sounds like he's going to move down to 185, but this is a great wrestler, a high level wrestler, and a guy who's still very raw. Maybe fans don't know who he is, but he is short, he is stocky, and he is tough. I'm impressed with him. I thought that this was a tough, even though you've been around obviously a lot longer in MMA than he was, or that he has been, tough first fight to come back to after a 2+ year layoff. So I don't want to put too much stock in that performance, because I do think 2+ years away, given the, you know, your age, at your age, I feel like that's a tough thing. You know, it's not easy to just get back on that bicycle. So I think Tom Lawler has more fight left in him.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I remember after the fight, I look into his corner and DC is standing there and giving me like a good job, buddy. Way to go, clap. And I just looked at him and I thought, like, this is not what I got into MMA for.
Right.
You know? So, you know, I think mentally it was tougher on me than some of the other fights, decisions that I've lost, but you know, that's part of the game. I'm in this to test myself at this point. I don't think I'm going to be fighting for the world title anytime soon. I need to get back on track and, find out where I am.
You know, do you want to keep fighting?
I'm in too deep, man.
What do you mean?
Where else am I going to be able to make this money in one shot that I can make fighting? You know?
Well, what about pro wrestling?
Should I ask the question again, Ariel? Where else am I going to make this money in one shot?
Right. What did you make for Golden Boy, if you don't mind me asking?
$25,000 flat.
Okay.
Which is a little bit less than my UFC show money.
Wow.
But, you know, I put in a lot of years in this sport. I put in time in the gym. I put in the work. And I can live with, you know, $25,000 to take a beating.
Right. That I would imagine would equal a lot of pro wrestling jobs, right? On the indie scene, 25,000, like probably over 100.
I did the math, and I don't even want to tell you how many matches I would have to do to equal that. But yeah, I have people that after the fight, you know, on social media or the internet, would say, you know, it was tough to watch out there. Big fan of Tom. Maybe he should just stick to pro wrestling. And it's like the people don't understand. You know, even regional mixed martial artists make a ton more than regional pro wrestlers do. It's not even on the same ballpark.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're, you know, competing for the WWEs of the world. Daron Wynn, after the fight, told me that his experience fighting for De La Hoya wasn't, you know, one to write home about. He didn't know his name. He saw him looking at his nameplate. He didn't feel like there was any connection there, like he was really truly invested. And of course, it's now led to this whole silly feud between him and Dana White. What was your experience like fighting for Golden Boy?
I have absolutely no complaints. I enjoyed my time working with them and for them. I will say that the initial communication left something to be desired on perhaps both parts. But after I showed up the week of the fight, I was taken care of, you know, beautifully. They did everything they could to accommodate us. You know, I have absolutely no complaints. I would love to see De La Hoya continue on in mixed martial arts, maybe not with himself as the figurehead, but bringing in people who understand the mixed martial arts game. We had interviews done with us before the fights, and, you know, they asked a question. What does it mean to you for Oscar De La Hoya to be getting into MMA promoting? And the first thing I said was, like, I'm making less money than I was previously. After that was one of the first things that he brought up in defense of Golden Boy.
No, you're good. You're good.
So I brought up some of the issues that I had. You know, primarily this was a one fight show. This was Chuck Liddell taking on Tito Ortiz, and it doesn't have to be like that. You know, we've seen throughout combat sports, and UFC doesn't do a great job of it, but some of the foreign promotions, more specifically Ryzen, really does a great job of showing kind of the stories on the undercard. It's not always going to be about the two main eventers. There's Efren Escudero, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Great story. You know, he comes from an immigrant background. He's been all around the world fighting for years and years and years. He's been at the highest of highs, winning tough. He's been at the lowest of lows. And here he is on the Golden Boy show. And guess what? That story wasn't told.
Right.
Nobody talked about that. And there's these instances, you know, much like that, much like my own experience, you know, with USADA and coming back from that. Daron Wynn, one of the top amateur wrestlers in the country. There's a story there to be told between, you know, taking one of the top amateur wrestlers against one of the top independent pro wrestlers and putting them against each other. You know, there's different ways to milk the matchups and milk the fighters and get the stories out of them. And they just didn't do that. But, you know, it was the first show, and hopefully that they continue on and learn from those mistakes. And if they don't, hopefully other people do.
Right. Of course, you mentioned the USADA suspension, the reason for your layoff, and you were somewhat vocal online once the whole John Jones thing happened. What's going on? What's happening? What happened to your face?
It's about to explode, Ariel.
Well, so what was? Can you verbalize how you were feeling when you heard about the John Jones situation, then moving the event? Of course, we all know draws are draws, and in every walk of life, right, not just in fighting, there are people who are going to get preferential treatment. But when you saw the sort of explanation and everyone coming out and, you know, giving us the reasons for why they were doing things and not suspending him, considering what had happened to you, what were you feeling? What were you thinking?
At this point?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised by anything that happens. Ariel, as you know, as my children know out there, as I know, life, it's not fair. And I've just come to accept that, especially in this USADA situation. People are going to do their best to bend over backwards and give you an explanation, to give you the reasoning behind what they want to present to you and what they want you to think or what they want you to know. And that's what's happening here. If we can't be sure of any of the science that's telling us that John Jones either re-ingested something or didn't re-ingest it, then how can we be sure of any of this science?
Right.
There's too many inconsistencies. not only with the results and how they're portrayed, but with how people are treated. It's no coincidence, I would imagine, that the USADA and UFC policy on releasing suspensions was changed, you know, right around the time that John Jones and this whole, you know, recent failure thing started. Moving an entire card for him so that he can fight in lieu of, you know, scientific evidence, really proving one way or another that what they found was there or not. It's just ridiculous, but, you know, I'm not surprised. This is a money-making business. It's an entertainment business. We can try to portray it as a sport as much as we want, but as long as there's promoters and as long as there's money to be made on people fighting, you know, we're going to have to deal with this sort of thing. And it's unfortunate. It sucks. There's been a number of fighters who have kind of been martyrs to the whole situation in some ways. You know, myself, I would say, Sean O'Malley, another one. There's a number of people, Tim Means, Frank Mir, Josh Barnett, you know, a number of people who've had to deal with, kind of unfair treatment from USADA. And, it's going to continue on.
The main thing that I still don't understand is why did they keep you on the sidelines for so long and then get rid of you, release you once the suspension was coming up? Why didn't they just release you at the beginning of your suspension so that you can go out and continue fighting?
Well, I think you answered your own question. I don't think that they want to set that precedent and allow people to do that. There's a similar situation going on right now with Fabricio Werdum.
Right.
And we'll see. You know, he's asked for his release. If they release him, then that's a big issue with me. You know, I hope he gets his release because I think that a lot of the ways that USADA, the whole implementation of it has been a burden on fighters in a way. So I hope he does get what he wants. But at the same time, that's just going to prove once again how unfair it is to me.
Right.
You know, and other people.
Different strokes for different folks. Now, do you feel like this, they just announced that they have re-upped the deal with USADA at around the same time as this whole John Jones situation, which I think is interesting timing to say the least. Do you feel like the partnership, in other words, cannot be trusted, that it's too incestuous, that it's not truly independent? Because at the end of the day, the UFC is paying USADA, so how could it be truly independent? That it would almost be better off not going back to the old system so that this screwy stuff doesn't happen anymore?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we've also seen a little bit of pushback from some of the commissions. You know, the California State Athletic Commission doesn't seem to be too overly happy with USADA. They seem to be kind of siding with WADA on some of the instances, or at least that's what it seems, or WADA, or more, you know, inclined to use their testing policies. So I think there's going to be pushback not only from fighters, but from the fans, and probably increasingly from commissions, because USADA does take some of the power away from the commissions. And we saw that with the entire John Jones situation, with California not sanctioning him, and then USADA giving him, you know, that whatever clause it is to take off, you know, months off of a sentence. So, you know, I think there's going to be some continued issues there, some continued problems. But realistically, UFC is the only one that employs USADA. So, you know, they're going to be the only ones dealing with it. So it's not going to be like an industry-wide problem per se. So I don't know that it'll get cleaned up.
Did you ever knowingly take PEDs, Tom?
Nope.
So do you know how the Austrian got into your system?
I do not.
Still, till this day?
Still to this day.
Wow.
Still to this day. I can tell you from what I understand in the Jeff Nowitzki interview on Joe Rogan, he did mention that in the future there may be like an allowable level of substances. You know, if you're under a certain amount,
correct?
You know, due to the trace amounts that it's you know, been found in people from other products. So there, what I would say is that just be careful about what you eat. There's a lot of things that are out there that, you know, you think are regulated, or you think that would be regulated, that aren't. Emergency is not something that's regulated by the FDA, which kind of blew my mind. You know, if you go to Smoothie King or Tropical Smoothie or something. There's no telling what they're putting in those smoothies. If you get a, you know, like a booster or some sort of protein, you know, I don't know where they're sourcing these things from. The more you read about it, the more you realize it's really just the Wild West and it's unregulated and, you know, can screw you.
Okay. So now here's the biggest question of them all. This is the one that I've been really wanting to ask you all interview long. Are you all in? AEW. Is Tom, this seems like the perfect place for you, Tom. AEW, the hottest thing in the world of pro wrestling, just launched last week. I was waiting for you to show up at that press conference. Forget about Chris Jericho. Forget about the Young Bucks. Forget about Cody Rhodes. Where's Filthy Tom? This was made for you. Are you signing with them?
Not to my knowledge. I'm Come not on. Signing with them.
Why?
You may see me. Hey, maybe you'll see me show up at a Gan Ryojima press conference.
Oh.
You know? Maybe maybe I'll be at the World Lethwei Championships headbutting people with this giant noggin I have. Who knows? I'm a mercenary, Ariel.
Yes.
If the Young Bucks and, you know, Tony Khan and Cody for money my way, I'll perk my cauliflower ears up and listen. But right now, I'm pretty happy where I am. I've got a world title fight against Low Ki coming up at the old ECW Arena.
Whoa.
On February 2nd at MLW Super Fight. And actually, 2 days before that, Ariel, this will probably interest you and some of the viewers out there. It'll be fighting Ken Shamrock, the Ultimate Bar Brawl in Atlanta.
What?
Just days before the Super Bowl. Yes.
Really? And this is a pro wrestling match?
It will be a contested professional wrestling match in a bar. No ring, no rule.
You versus Ken Shamrock, the world's most dangerous man?
Me versus Ken Shamrock, the world's
most dangerous. He was still on the scene. I didn't know he was still competing.
He's coming back for one night only because he's not going to survive.
To fight you?
I've already taken out Dan the Beast Severn in the past. And now
you're the legend killer. You're the new Randy Orton.
Yes.
Well, this is exciting. And this is Super Bowl weekend. What day?
It is the Thursday.
The Thursday? Actually. I might have to go to Atlanta just to watch this in person and then go home because I can't care less about the Super Bowl. But this sounds like a fun time. No ring?
Yeah, my Patriots will be in the Super Bowl.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I'll beaten up Low Ki the night before, so I won't be in Atlanta. But
wow. Okay, so are you – let's just say the pay was equal. Would you be content being a full-time pro wrestler? Do you love it that much?
I've been a professional wrestler the whole time, Ariel.
Yes. I love it. What a great answer. That was perfect. That was amazing. Do you feel like there's a future for you here? There's an actual path to making a full-time living. Do you see it?
No.
Why not? Where's the confidence?
I think diversifying my portfolio.
Okay.
And being kind of a multi-talented, multifaceted performer is my best bet. Hey, maybe I'll fight. Maybe I'll be doing wrestling. Maybe I'll be doing commentary. Maybe I'll be the ring boy. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Matt Riddle's doing it well. Shayna Baszler has made the transition. Why can't you?
That's right. Elias Theodoru, he's been...
Yes.
It's not wrestling, but he's been doing a good job as the ring boy. Look, I've been growing my hair
out.
The
hair is phenomenal. Barnett? Isn't Barnett doing something on Frank Mir's doing something WrestleMania weekend.
Yes, it is Josh Barnett's Bloodsport.
That's right.
Show that
so there's the lines are getting blurred every day. I feel like let's have some confidence here. Let's go for it. 2019,
the
your
lines
year.
The lines have been getting blurred since the 1800s.
Sure. It's always funny to me, by the way, when fans get upset. Like I had Becky Lynch on the show a couple of weeks ago and they're like, how dare you have a pro wrestler on? I'm like, this is all pro wrestling, what you guys watch. Don't you know the roots of MMA are in pro wrestling, you marks, right?
Not only that, but she trains mixed martial arts. She's been training for years.
Yeah.
You know,
okay, so settle down.
My friend, Seth Petruzzelli down in Orlando has been speaking great things about her skills for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Doesn't he work at the training center, the WWE training center?
I don't know what he's doing.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to see you have a little more confidence. I feel like you can make it.
I do know, Ariel, that Dave Kaplan was just on Jeopardy last night.
He was?
I watched it last night. So.
How'd he do? I saw that. Fellow tough cast member of yours.
He finished in the negative, so he did not get to play Final Jeopardy. He got the double Jeopardy early on in the second round. And he said, let's give the people what they truly came to see. Let's give them a true daily double.
Wow.
And then he lost.
How did he even get on that? Like, is he a trivia aficionado at this point? I had not even heard of his name for several years.
He had actually won a game show in the past. I can't remember what it was. It was like some sort of celebrity dancing game show.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly what it was. You can find it on YouTube, though. So he's a veteran of game shows and reality shows.
He looked great. I think was he wearing like a suit or a bow tie or something like that? I thought he looked phenomenal.
Yeah, he was wearing a suit. Yeah,
he didn't
look too good with the negative 200 point.
It happens. By the way, you're still at Syndicate, right?
Correct, yes.
How's our friend Joanne Calderwood looking? I saw a picture of her on Instagram. She's looking buff. She's looking ripped.
Yeah, I don't want to make any comments about her appearance.
Okay,
you know?
Sorry.
I'm a married man.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I mean...
She's spoken for. So.
Oh, I know. How do you feel about that?
But as far as fighting skill,
yes.
As far as fighting skill goes, very talented. Much better striker than I am. I love watching her. And as evidenced by her last fight, she's got some ground skills. So this fight against Ariane Lipsky should be an awesome one to watch if you're a fan.
Yes, I believe she was in your corner for your fight, right?
That is correct, yes. Dr. Neville herself.
Are you returning the favor on Saturday?
Ariel.
Yes.
I will be color commentating for CES MMA.
Right. See, I was CES trying to set you up. I was trying to
on UFC Fight Pass.
That's right. That's
on
right.
3 p.m.
That's right. Wow, you chose a gig, a paying online streaming gig, over cornering your friend who just cornered you a month and a half ago. Some friend you are, some teammate you are, Tom. I'm sorry.
I heard what you said.
Well, she's looking great. By the way, I see no problem with saying that she's looking great physically. I mean, I would say that about you. I would say that about Alan Joban. I would say that about TJ Dillashaw. What's the big deal? I mean, you know, I think weight has always been an issue. 115, she was too, you know, she was too skinny. 135 was too big. It looks like 125 is her home. That's all I was trying to say.
I will agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah. She puts in the work at the UFC PI. There's a lot of athletes that are getting their money's worth out of that place, I'd say, at this point. And she's definitely one of them. If you look at the physical transformation that she's, you know, made over the past year or so, she looks, you know, great shape, probably the best shape she's ever been in. So
yeah.
Good job to them. Hats off to her trainers over there and everybody else.
Big fight. That is airing, by the way, on ESPN. Okay, so finally, we've got CES on Saturday. We've got pro wrestling coming up, Super Bowl weekend. You've got the low-key fight. You've got the Ken Shamrock fight. You're going to end up at AEW at some point by the end of the year. That's my official prediction. As far as MMA fight is concerned, do we have our next one lined up? Are we talking to anyone? Where are we at there? If it's not Golden Boy, of course.
Yeah, unfortunately, in the fight, in the third round, I broke my hand. I'm not quite sure how you can see this there. But this this knuckle was shattered into multiple spots.
Oh, yes, I see.
So basically, it kind of turned into like a you can kind of see the bone sticking out there. But that knuckle's missing now. So essentially, it cracked in multiple places and fell over the top of the bone. So it's kind of like a popsicle now,
okay.
A bone with the finger. So I was cleared last week or 2 weeks ago, and I started punching, and it didn't feel that great. So
okay.
I'm still on the recovery trail. As far as this goes, but I would imagine somewhere around May,
okay,
I'll be ready to fight again.
All right. Tom, I wish you the best. Thanks for coming on short notice. You helped us out greatly. Greg Hardy bailed, and I'd much rather talk to you, just for the record. So this was a lot more fun for me. Thank you so much for doing this. Good luck on Saturday. Good luck with the
Kawaii. So many jokes.
Yeah, we'll just leave it at that. But I appreciate it. And I wish you the best and hope to see you out there at one of those matches in the very near future. Get well soon with the hand as well. Great to catch up.
All right. I'll be in New York in April.
Okay. Oh, yes. WrestleMania. Okay. Thank you, Tom. All the best to you. There he is. Filthy Tom, one of the great guys in this business. Appreciate his time very much. And I like the new hair. I like the new hair very much. Very quickly, before we transition, around 7 minutes or so, we're going to be joined by our next guest, his name being Kamaru Usman. I told you we were supposed to be joined by Greg Hardy. One thing that I've learned throughout all this, and Greg Hardy's going to be in the co-main event on Saturday against Alan Crowder. One thing I've learned about this whole process, Greg Hardy coming over from the NFL to mixed martial arts and eventually getting signed by the UFC contender series and whatnot, I have been reminded that a lot of fans actually don't know who Greg Hardy is and aren't NFL fans, aren't regular sports fans. So one of the things that I wanted to do before having him on the show was just actually educate very quickly the masses as to who he is and go through this this brief timeline of events, how we got to this point with Greg Hardy. Greg Hardy was a decorated football player, a Pro Bowler. He played for the Carolina Panthers and then the Dallas Cowboys. He started to get in trouble in May of 2014, May 13th, 2014 to be exact. That's when a woman told the police that she had been physically assaulted and threatened by Greg Hardy. You're seeing right over there that he played six seasons, to be exact, in the National Football League. On July 15, 2014, a judge in a bench trial. Now, the difference between a bench trial and a jury trial is that in a bench trial, it's just a judge. There is no jury. So a judge in a bench trial found Greg Hardy guilty of assaulting his former girlfriend and threatening to kill her. Excuse me. He was sentenced to a 60-day suspended sentence and a 18-month probation. However, in North Carolina, which is where this case took place, the law allows those convicted on misdemeanor charges in bench trials a right to a jury trial, and he took that opportunity. On November 4th of 2014, his November 17th court date was postponed to December, to 2015, which meant that he sat out that season as a football player. On February 9th of 2015, charges against Hardy were dismissed when the woman could not be found for the jury trial, despite what law enforcement said, quote, they took extraordinary measures, end quote, to locate her. The woman had said in fall of 2014 she did not want to go through another trial, and that particular county's district attorney said that she believed she intentionally made herself unavailable. The district attorney also said the woman had settled her civil suit against Hardy at that point. April of 2015, Hardy was suspended 10 games without pay for violating the league's personal conduct policy by using physical force against Nicole Holder, the woman, in at least four instances. July of 2015, Hardy's suspension was reduced to four games. An arbitrator said the length of the suspension was, quote, simply too much, end quote, in light of league precedent. He played 12 games in the 2015 NFL season. In 2016, no team signed Greg Hardy. He became a free agent. September of 2016, Hardy was arrested on suspicion of cocaine possession in Texas. March of 2017, Hardy reached a plea deal on cocaine charges, $500 fine, community service, and, quote, stay out of trouble. November of 2017, he won his amateur MMA debut. June of 2018, he won his professional MMA debut. He has since won two other fights, all under a minute. He was supposed to fight in December. They took him off that Island Fights card. They put him on the ESPN debut card. And of course, this has been a topic of controversy, not only because it's Greg Hardy with this violent past coming over to a violent sport, but also because he is on the same card as Rachel Ostovich, who we spoke to last week, whose husband is standing trial in February for second degree assault. As I said at the time, I thought the decision was tone deaf. But it's happening. It's here. Was looking forward to talking to Greg Hardy. We will not be doing so today. But I thought it was important to bring people up to speed as to who this man is, why it is a hot topic, why so many people are upset about it. Because quite frankly, I got the sense that a lot of people just didn't know. You may have seen things here or there, but them's the facts. That's what happened. That's why he's no longer in the NFL. And that's why his, I guess, arrival to mixed martial arts has been met with a lot of controversy, a lot of debate, a lot of skepticism, to put it mildly. That's the co-main event, by the way, on Saturday's card. He meets Alan Crowder. I suspect, given his past, a lot of people are going to be rooting for Allen Crowder. As I said, prelims are on ESPN Plus, mid prelims on ESPN Television, and then the rest of the prelims, or I should say the rest of the main card, is on ESPN Plus. Now, a lot of fans have asked me, because I know we are seen right now live by everyone all over the world, what does this mean for me? I don't get ESPN Plus. I live in Canada. I live in Croatia. I live in Japan. Well, it's the same thing as the old era, my friends, the Fox era. It's the exact same thing. Your local network deal will be showing. So if you're in Canada, it's on TSN. Don't worry. Just because you don't have ESPN Plus or ESPN in your country doesn't mean you're not getting these cards. It's just the same thing. This is just for the United States. So I just want to make that clear, because I know a lot of fans have been very confused, very upset. They haven't gotten answers. It doesn't make sense. I don't know how I get this. I've tried to sign up. Don't worry. You're all going to see. It's just like the old times. It airs here on ESPN in the States, but if you're in Canada, it's TSN. If you're in the UK and Ireland, it's BT Sport, et cetera, et cetera. So do not worry. I want to reiterate, on Saturday, I will be doing a radio version of this program, which I'm very excited about. 4 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Radio National. 4 to 5, a special radio edition of this show live. First time we're on terrestrial radio. And then again, if you want a 1-hour condensed version of this show with some other new things, check it out every Tuesday at midnight. This week, it's going to be airing on ESPN News. All right, moving along now to our next guest. I've been dying to talk to this next individual. I want to hear what he has to say. He has been in the news heavily as of late. He is the man who will be meeting Tyron Woodley on March 2nd. They will be meeting for the UFC welterweight title, UFC 234 in Las Vegas. He is the one and only Kamaru Usman, and he joins us now via the magic of Skype. There he is, kind enough to be joining us from his car. Kamaru, how are you?
Good. What's going on?
It's good to talk to you. Are we cool, Kamaru? I know you're mad at me. Are we cool? I want to address it right off the top, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. Let's address it. I don't want to be in a fight with you. I don't want you to be mad at me. I have the utmost respect for you, so let's clear it up right here and now, right off the bat.
Nah, it is what it is. I got no beef with nobody, you know. My thing is, I'm not going to waste energy being upset or holding grudges or things like that. You know, I might be disappointed in certain things, certain situations at certain times, but that's about it, you know. It's water under the bridge. I just, you know, rub it off the shoulder and keep you moving.
But could you tell me what you're just – because honestly, I don't want to upset you. And I think based on my conversation with your manager, you were feeling like I was pushing for Colby over you. Is that the general sentiment?
No, listen, I, you know, everybody has a preference. I don't really care what you know, one preference over another. You know, the one that really matters is mine. That's all I care about.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, yeah, you have your preference, but it is what it is, you know. Water under the bridge, I keep it moving, you know.
And I think it says a lot about you that you're here, even though you may feel a certain way about me right now. But I just want to reiterate what I said last week and on other programs. You were the guy. You deserve that title shot. I never was campaigning for you to fight anyone else. I did not think that that was fair. You have done more than enough. I just said, let's get this fight over with, because we've been teased about it for a year. Have you heal up? Because I know you told me you were banged up after the win over RDA. You sit in the front row. You fight the winner in the summer. I felt like everyone was happy. So I don't want you to think that I was saying, oh, you have to fight someone else. You don't deserve a title shot. I never said that. I do not believe in that. I just want to make that clear to you.
I understand. I got you.
Okay, cool. Let me ask you this, because maybe I could take a piece of advice and learn something from you. How did we go from almost exactly a year ago, you know, the situation with Dana White, him publicly criticize you, to now where it seems like he's your number one fan? How did you do this? What's the secret? How did you get in his good graces?
There's no secret. There's no good graces or this and that. You know, one thing you need to, you know, a lot of people don't realize is, you know, some people are like, oh, this guy, he's racist. He wants this guy. He likes that or this color and that color. You know, one thing that I've come to figure out is, you know, the only color that really matters to them is green. You know, that's really it. So, you know, it has nothing to do with what I'm doing. Oh, he's my biggest fan or this and that. No. You know, if this season, if there's an opportunity to where you can be that guy to bring in the dough, then that it is what it is. That's what's going to happen. So, you know, that's it. That's all it is. It's not at all, well, you're in his good graces. What did you do to get there? You know, I was just me. I kept fighting and created the opportunity for myself. Now the opportunity is here and I'm ready to take full advantage of it.
How are you feeling? Because I remember when we spoke after the RDA fight, you told me you were banged up, that you were willing to fight in January, but also, you know, having a little more time would help you. How are you actually feeling ahead of the biggest fight of your career?
Feeling good. You know, feel just like any other camp. You know, you're going to go into camp with bumps and bruises because, to, you know what, and that's another thing is a lot of people say, oh, well, I got to fight, so I'm going to go into a training camp. Not a training camp. I'm in an everlasting training camp. I train all day, every, you know, obviously except weekend. But it is, I'm always training. I'm always in the gym because this is the times that you get better. These are the times where you learn and you decide what you're going to use. So when you do have a fight, you do have a training camp, it's time to polish. That's not the time for you to be learning new things and learning new instructions. So, you know, I've always been training. So, yeah, when I go into training camp, I have bumps and bruises from the continuous training that I've done. But, you know, I feel just as good as any other camp.
Okay, so no concerns, basically, that it's happening too soon.
No. I mean, it can't happen too soon. I'm fighting to change my life. I'm fighting. This is what I got into the sport for this opportunity to prove this. And here it is. There's no such thing as too soon. It's too soon when you're not prepared. I've been putting in work for years. The only thing now is the opportunity for me to showcase what I've been putting in the work.
I noticed that over the past week, since this was made official, you've remained relatively quiet. Colby spoke to everyone under the sun. Tyron, for the most part, remained quiet. We're going to talk to him in around an hour or so. But you didn't go out there and talk to the world and do a victory lap tour and whatnot. Any particular reason for that?
What's the point of that? Like that's what I want to address. Like, what's the point? Like, people are acting like, oh, I'm this big social media guy or this and that. Nah, I've never been that. Never been that. I don't get off on all this social media trolling and all this back and forth bullshit. I don't get off on that. That's not me. You know, I stay true to myself. I sell me. You know, when I state something or when I say what I can, that's my honest assessment of myself and what I bring to the table and how I can perform. That's not me trying to troll, me talking shit, or me trying to sell fake beef or whatnot. So, you know, there's some guys out here now that are trolling because this is what keeps them hot. I'm hot right now, so they got to jump on the bandwagon to try to keep themselves hot or people to talk about them. And all I do is I laugh at that. That's just troll. I laugh at them. All of them, I laugh at them. Kobe did the same thing. I laugh at them. And now you got this other curly-headed boy doing the same thing. All I do is I laugh at them. I just laugh at them because I'm hot right now, you know. So they want to be where I'm at. That's all it is. I laugh at them, man. You know, the only thing I can say to that is, hey, when I see you, keep the same energy. Right. You've seen it before. I've done that before. Please have the same energy when I see you.
Okay, so Colby's comments last week, he's very upset. He did the rounds, spoke to us, spoke to everyone else under the sun. Did you catch any of them? Do you take a little bit, considering the history between you two, you take a little bit of joy seeing him in this frustrated state?
No, I'm going to be honest, 100% honest with you. I didn't.
Okay.
You know, the one thing that I did see is when I was on actually catching a flight that Monday.
Uh-huh.
And I was on a flight with my daughter. The only thing that I did see, I saw a snippet of what you posted about Corey Anderson. And you know, Corey, hats off to my man, Corey, man. An amazing guy, all around good guy. You know, one of the other hardest working guys in the sport. So, you know, hats off to him. But, you know, I saw a snippet of that. And then after that, I saw a snippet of Colby actually on the show. I didn't really watch it.
Okay.
And yeah, it sounded like he was crying. You know, I really, his voice was trembling at one point of the show. He was like, well, Dana White lying to me. Dana White said this and that, you know, and I feel lied to. Hey, no, sit your ass down somewhere. It's over with, you know, like he had an opportunity. He passed on it. Easy as that. Like I said, the only color that matters is green here. You had your opportunity. They tried to make that fight. You passed on it. So then they tried to make the fight again. Woodley was hurt. They wanted to keep you up. So they put me in place. You passed on that. So you got to sit down when they pass. Man, I'm over that. Like, hey, that's old news. I'm not dealing with that anymore. It's old news. We're on to the belt. You know, that's all that matters. That's what this was all about. And now we're here.
Just want to get from your perspective the timeline. You were ready and willing to fight on either January 19th or January 26th as well, right? You said that you would fight either Colby or Tyron, and based on my discussions, UFC really appreciated that and in essence are rewarding you for stepping up. Is that accurate? Were you offered fights against both guys on either date and, of course, didn't come to fruition? Is that what happened?
Well, this was the thing is Tyron wasn't able to fight.
Right.
Well, he said he was. Either he said he wasn't able, or I don't know how that transitioned, so don't quote me on that. But all I know is they needed somebody to step in to headline the card. Obviously, I just fought less than a week or something ago before that.
Yeah.
And, of course, I had bumps and bruises. I just got out of a 5-round fight, you know. And so my thing is, the only one, the thing that I've worked hard to get to the position I'm at, the only other person that I'm willing to sacrifice my shot at the title for is Colby, because I genuinely don't like the guy. Genuinely don't like the guy. Everybody else I don't really care about. Like, I've proven myself. I'm there. And so I said, if Colby is there and he needs a fight, I'm going to step in and I'm going to fight him. I don't care if I have a broken thumb, broken leg, broken toes. It doesn't matter. That's a guy genuinely, you know, I think the frustration and the animosity is going to carry me through to the other side to really unleash the ass whooping that I want to give him. So, you know, that was the whole point behind that. But, you know, let's be honest, this was the vision all along. It's a fight for this title. I've been putting in work for years, since I got into this, 14, 15 years old. I've been putting in the work. I've sacrificed a lot of things. I've sacrificed my body. I've sacrificed time. I've sacrificed relationship. I've sacrificed a lot of things to get to this point. So March 2nd is my time to go out there and show that it was all worth it.
How are things between you and Tyron? Because I saw an exchange around 2 weeks ago, and it seemed to go in the direction, you know, I think there were some things that he said about you that I think fired you up, calling you some names, and you responded, and it went back and forth. This was when, you know, the fight wasn't official just yet. I think you know the exchange that I'm talking about. Do you feel like he crossed the line? I think some race was discussed as well. Do you feel like it got into a territory that it didn't need to go into?
I mean, it is what it is, man. Tyron, you know, he's a champ. And so when he feels some type of way, he's a human being as well. When he feels some type of way, he's going to react in that sense. So, you know, that's what I'm chalking that up to. He was reacting. But, you know, me, I don't hate Tyron by no means. I don't hate him. You know, I'm coming for the strap. That's it. That's it. Doesn't matter who's standing there. That's all I'm coming for is the strap. I don't hate Tyron. It's not no animosity or whatever towards him. I don't fight like that. You know, I wasn't trolling him. It wasn't anything. Like I said, I was just stating how I felt. I was stating where I was at, you know, and what I'm capable of. That was it. He felt some type of way about it, and he responded, and we went back and forth. But it is what it is, you know. The fight is official, just like I said it would be. Mm. And, hey, March 2nd, that's where we at.
Do you have a history with him? You're both from the wrestling world. Have you known him for a long time? Have you, I don't think you've competed against him, obviously, but is this someone that you were aware of back in the day before you even got into MMA?
It's funny, actually. I remember the first time I seen him, and it was, I want to say 2003, something like that, or 2004, I think it might have been. I was at a tournament. It was like the Northern Plains. It was my first national tournament. I was traveling with the freestyle and Greco-Roman team, and he was wrestling. I think he might have been in college at that time already. And he was wrestling, and I remember looking over at the far mats and seeing some of these guys wrestling. It was the older guys, the college guys. And I remember seeing, you know, oh, man, that's another black dude that's wrestling, you know, because it wasn't many of us in the tournament. So I was like, oh, man, it's another black dude over there. It was like, oh, those dudes are in college. That's the open division. And I just remember that, you know, that was it. That was all I remember. And then, of course, when I went through, when I got in college and things like that, I started hearing a little bit about other people. But I'm not the type of person who gossip or things like that. I'm always worried about me. I'm focused on me. I've always been focused on myself. You know, if I'm doing everything right, I will get where I want to get to. So it hasn't really been worried about all that situation. But once I got into MMA, of course, you know, I knew where I wanted to be at. I knew who was at the top. And those were the guys that I was chasing. And I've been chasing this for a long, long time. And so, yeah, I know Tyron. I know of him. You know, me, as far as I'm concerned, me and him are cool. You know, as opposed to other people who are saying, oh, yeah, they know me or things like that. We're friends. No, they don't really know me like that, man. They don't know me. You know, me and Tyron are cool as far as I'm concerned. But March 2nd, we're going to step into that octagon. We're going to be staring across from each other. And I'm going to go out there and look to put on the best performance that I've ever put on.
You alluded to this a little bit ago. Ben Askren keeps trying to bait you to respond on Twitter, and he keeps calling you Marty from Nebraska. Why is he calling you this, and does it bother you when he calls you this?
No, it doesn't bother me at all. Like, that's what I said. Like, this is, it's funny to me. It's trolling. You know, I'm hot right now, Ariel. Some people are trying to jump on the bandwagon to keep themselves hot. Don't forget, not too long ago, when Sujara was going through the situation with, what's her name, Valentina,
yep.
Sujara was the hot topic. So he commented on that.
Hmm.
You know, when Khabib Nurmagomedov just got done giving that beating to Conor, he commented on that. Because, you know, that's what's hot. That's what these trolls do. They jump on whatever is hot, just like the other punk that just got skipped over, Covington. You know, he was always commenting on what was hot because he was just trying to keep his name out there. And that's all he's trying to do. Marty is a nickname that I was given when I was wrestling in high school for my college coach, my high school coach. He just wanted to call me Marty. That was the name. So he called me that. And it was cool. I mean, everybody has a nickname. Who doesn't have a nickname? You know, I have multiple nicknames. When I coached on the Ultimate Fighter Season 14, I was a coach on there. Jason Miller, Mayhem Miller, started calling me Kush one night. He was like, you know what? I'm going to call you Kush. Started calling me Kush. Guess what? The next day, all on set, everybody called me Kush. Till this day, Dennis Bermudez calls me Kush. Steven Salad calls me Kush. There's tons of guys that call me Kush. You know, that's not, it has nothing to do with anything. You know, it's just a nickname. I laugh it off. It's actually funny to me. He thinks it's doing something. Nah, it's nothing. You're just trolling because you're trying to keep your name relevant. You're trying to be hot. That's fine. But keep that energy when I see you on site.
Have you ever seen him face-to-face recently since all
that's,
this happened?
That's the funny thing. Oh. I've never seen this dude face-to-face.
Oh.
Ever.
Ever.
Ever in my life.
Oh, wow.
I remember he did an interview with you. He was like, oh, yeah, we were cool. We're friends or this and that. I don't know you, bruh. I don't know you ever. I've never seen – me and him have never spoken a word to each other ever in my life. In my 31 years of life, I've never seen this dude.
Wow.
His little brother, Matt Askren, I have seen. Back in high school, they wrestled. I think it was like a national duel or something like that. And they were in Texas. I think it was in Texas or somewhere. So I met his little brother. His little brother's cool as hell. Cool as shit. You know, as opposed to him, you know, I've never seen this dude. But like I said, I'm hot right now. So he's trying to jump on the bandwagon.
So where's he getting this info from? Where's he getting all this Marty from Nebraska stuff if he's never had an interaction with you before?
It's Marty. It was a nickname that I was wrestling. See, this is the thing. That's what I'm saying, Ariel. I've always done, worried about my business, worked hard to get where I am. So by me working hard, a lot of people heard of me. A lot of people heard of me, Ariel. In the wrestling world, in the MMA world, a lot of people hear of me. They're like, oh, Marty, that wrestler? Oh, that dude, that's a bad dude. You know, he's beating up a lot of Division I guys. That's a bad dude there. Oh, Marty, that he used to wrestle, the MMA fighter? Oh, he's tearing people up in the UFC now. And now he's fighting for the world title. So he can talk, try to troll all you want. But like I said, I see you. Keep that same energy.
I think his insinuation is that you're creating this character for yourself, that you're not really, you know, you're not being true to the world. You're actually just a regular.
Ariel, what's my name?
Kamaru, that's all. I only know you as Kamaru Usman. I learned
Thank
about
you.
Yeah.
That's my name. That's my given name. It says so. You want to see my ID? You
no,
want to see my
okay.
passport? You want to see my birth certificate? Exactly. That's my name. Where am I from, Ariel? Where was I born?
Nigeria.
Thank you. I was raised in Nigeria till I was about 8.
That's right.
Strong. That's bred in me. That's me. Hmm. Now I have a platform for me to really show my culture, to show where I'm from, to show how hard my people work to get to where we're at. So why wouldn't I use that? So how am I not being true to myself? See, everybody just want to jump on this, you know, because we're in the season of trolls. Mm. Everybody want to troll and people want to hop on it and just talk and talk and talk. But, hey, I don't have time for that. I'm too busy winning. And March 2nd, I will be the new welterweight world champion.
You mentioned that this is going to change your life, that you've been working towards this for a long time. What does this do for your life, winning this belt?
Absolutely. It does a lot, man. I mean, like I said, Ariel, I just gave you some of the things that I've sacrificed.
Yeah.
You know, all these years working. You know, I'm one of those guys. I'm bred different. I'm a new school fighter with the old school mentality. I'm bred different. No one had to tell me, hey, you need to get up to run to work on your cardio. Hey, you need to train harder. Hey, you need to put in extra hours. I do all that shit by myself. I know it and I feel it and I do it. I do whatever it takes to win. You know, that's how I was always bred. When I was born in Nigeria and we were raised in Nigeria, we didn't have a lot. You had to having to walk miles to the well to get water to boil, to finally cook and clean, to wash your clothes, to bathe before you go to school, walk to school, and things I'm bred different. We're bred different, you know. We're not like all these dudes nowadays that want to troll just to get hot because they want 15 seconds of fame. I'm not about that, Ariel. I've been working hard, and now I'm in a position to where I get to go out there and really show the world what I've been working hard for. So that's all I'm looking forward to is March 2nd. I don't hear that other talk. I don't hear that. That's why I don't even respond. Why should I respond? Mm. Why should I give it my platform, give it my time? This belt is going to change that. I get to go out there and show my people that, hey, doesn't matter what situation you're in right now. You don't know what God has in store for you tomorrow. So, hey, I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to do what I do. And of course, Tyron Woodley himself said it. There's a big difference between being a challenger and being a champion. And March 2nd, I'm going to go out there and become the champion and change my stripe.
Last thing, Tyron's coming up in an hour. Anything you want to say to him?
Nah, man. You know, get ready, champ. March 2nd. You know, I want him to bring his best self. You know, this one, I want him to bring his best self because I'm appreciative that he's not robbing me of the opportunity that George St. Pierre robbed him of.
Hmm.
You know, because I think this all goes way back. You know, if Tyron had taken the belt from George St. Pierre, like the new wave of champions should have done, there wouldn't be a lot of this questioning on whether Tyron's this or that is that. You know, I think he is one of the greatest welterweights. He is, absolutely. You know, but which is it's an honor for me to go out there and then take the belt from him because I solidify myself as beating one of the greatest in the sport. So, you know, I'm March 2nd. I'm preparing for one of the best fights that I've ever put on.
Phenomenal stuff. Kamaru, I can't thank you enough, honestly. I didn't think that you would come on the program. I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me. I hope we're cool. And I wish you nothing but the best in the next month and a half as you prepare for this fight. It's a phenomenal fight on paper. It is well-deserved. Good luck to you. Looking forward to seeing you out there in Las Vegas on March 2nd.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you so much. There he is, the Nigerian nightmare himself, Kamaru Usman. That's incredible stuff right there. I am very excited for this fight, and I want to reiterate, I was never campaigning for him not to get the title shot next. Thought that they should play it out. They are not playing it out. It's fait accompli. Let us move on. It's a great fight coming up on March 2nd. That is the co-main event. The main event marks the Las Vegas return, or at least we hope and think so, of John Jones. He has that hearing coming up in just a couple of weeks. We expect him to get his license, and then we expect him to fight Anthony Smith in the main event. You'll recall, on the New Year's show, we spoke to Anthony Smith, and Anthony Smith predicted to us that he will be fighting John Jones next. I think a lot of you sort of rolled your eyes and said, yeah, maybe one more. Maybe John fights DC. No, that's not happening. It is John Jones versus Anthony Smith. Let us talk to the aforementioned Anthony Lionheart Smith, who joins us now via the magic of Skype. There he is, Anthony Smith, standing by. Anthony, how are you?
I'm good, Ariel. How are you?
I appreciate it. You know, I didn't expect to speak to you so quickly, but you got this title shot. It's a massive deal. It's the main event. I see it right in back of you over there on that whiteboard, which is a great shot. And so I felt compelled to reach out, and I appreciate the time. It's right in back of you, right over there on the other side. You see it?
Oh, well, look at that.
Yeah. Whoever's framed the screen did a great job. When you said that to me on the New Year's show, when you said you believed your next fight was against John Jones, was that something you were just kind of putting out there into the world, or did you truly believe that it would go down like this?
No, I truly believed it. I didn't see another option. I didn't think that Daniel was going to come down to 205. And when John said that he wasn't going up to heavyweight, I believed him. It was the way that he said it. It was, you know, it was a lot of that stuff. So, and I just, you know, as much as Corey Anderson doesn't like me, and I honestly, I think Corey Anderson's a great fighter. I really do. But he's not exciting, and he's not putting asses in seats. And I got finishes, and I'm doing everything that I got to do to get there. And I honestly, I just didn't see who else they put in front of me.
How did you find out you were getting the shot?
Well, we'd been talking about it a little bit. Right after John fought, it was a little bit of back and forth and trying to figure out timelines and stuff like that. And I was, you know, I had an injury in the Vulcan fight, so we're, you know, talking about that stuff. And then they called me on the day that Dana released it to TMZ. We had gotten it done that earlier that day.
Wow, because it happened pretty quickly, right? I mean, I didn't expect it to happen so fast. Did you think it would go that fast? I mean, I guess a week after his fight, right?
Yeah, I didn't think it would be that fast, but it was fairly quick. And as soon as they called it, it's so cool how the UFC just kind of knows me so well. They didn't call and say, "Hey, we kind of have this date in mind. Would you like to fight?" They called and said, "Hey, we got the John Jones fight done. We'll send you a bout agreement," and that's it. I said, "All right, cool," and that was the end of the conversation. It was literally that simple. Like, you know, all the contract stuff is already in, you know, is in play.
So the one weird thing, is everything okay? Someone interrupting you?
Sorry, Errol. What was that?
What's happening? Someone want to come in on the
air? I was talking to Mark.
Oh, okay. Mark Montoya.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the best coaches. Yes.
hey, Mark, let's talk to you.
Oh, okay. Talk to him right now. Sure.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark.
What's up, man?
How are you?
Oh, yeah.
You can't hear because of the headphones, right?
There we go.
There you go.
Hi, Ariel.
Hey, Mark, it's great to hear from you and great to see you. You've had a great year. Congratulations. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but let me just ask, can you hear me? No, you can't hear me.
Whoops.
I think it's because of the headphones.
Uh-oh. There we go. We got you.
Can you hear me now?
Now we can hear you. What's up?
Congratulations on a great year. It's great to have you on. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do want to ask you this. I'll put you on the spot with this big one. How do you beat John Jones?
Oh, that's a great question. We're not going to tell anybody.
Oh, man.
I'm just kidding. I'll tell you how we beat him. We go to work like we always do, and Anthony goes out here and showcases his skills. I know that Anthony's strength absolutely fall into John's weaknesses, and we're going to expose that for sure, and that's something we're doing this entire camp.
All right. I like that. That's a table setter, if you will. Appreciate you stopping by, Mark. Thank you. And in all honesty, congratulations on a phenomenal 2018.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
Okay. Back to Anthony here for a second. Let me...
Yeah. Sorry, Ariel.
No problem. You can hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. The one weird thing about this whole situation is the Nevada aspect, right? He has this hearing. Is there any part of you that is worried that, you know, you got this title fight, you're excited about this title fight, and then all of a sudden it gets taken away, it doesn't happen, something happens at this hearing?
No, I mean, I think that people are fairly confident that he's going to get licensed. I think that the UFC is taking the right steps, and I think that John is being forthcoming with everything. He's taken all the tests. He entered into the VADA pool. And it sounds like everyone's pretty confident that he's going to get licensed.
Okay. Can I ask you a favor? Is it possible to put the headphones back in? It sounded a lot better with the headphones. Is that annoying?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Errol, this is my worst interview yet.
Why? Why is it so bad?
I don't know. We're just jumbled, and I'm fresh out of practice, and I feel like I'm just doing you a terrible disservice.
No, absolutely not. You're the man, Anthony.
How about that? Is that better?
Yeah, much better. Thank you so much.
I'm so sorry.
No problem. You wanted to give your coach shine, and well-deserved, so I appreciate that. So you mentioned the Corey Anderson, you know, aspect in all this. We spoke to him last week. He was a little disappointed that he wasn't getting the love. At the end of the day, do you think that they went with you because of the finishes? You have the same amount of wins. Strength of schedule, if you will, is relatively the same, although you have the highest ranked guy, which was Vulcan. But do you think that getting those three finishes is what put you over the top here?
Yeah. I'm a firm believer that the UFC rewards people for their hard work, and I I did a lot of heavy lifting in a short amount of time. And I got the finishes, and that's my style. I chase the finish. I'm not here to just grind out the clock. I'm not trying to let the clock beat anybody. And I just lay it out there, you know. And I think that the UFC and I think the fans appreciate that, you know. I really do. And I think that if John had a choice, I think John Jones would choose to fight me. I really do. He doesn't want to go in there and put on lackluster performances. That guy wants to fight. And you can say whatever else you want about him. John Jones will not shy away from a fight. Mm. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think that if we're going to use the ranking system, you know, like I've always said, that it's really easy to discredit or be happy about the rankings as long as they work out in your favor or they don't. But I'm the next guy. I mean, if we're going by the rankings, I'm the next guy.
What I also love about this fight, I said this last week on our Ariel and the Bad Guy show. To me, it's one of the greatest, like, David versus Goliath fights that the UFC has ever put on, title fights, that is, because, you know, you have double digit losses. You've been around the world. You've had to scratch and claw for everything that you've gotten in your career. Now here you are fighting arguably the greatest ever, the guy who has never been beaten. Very few people have won rounds against John Jones. Of course, he has the one loss, but no one considers it a loss. Anthony Smith, of all people, like, if John Jones was going to lose, it should be against an Anthony Smith, right? A guy who has just been a dreamer, who has fought for everything, who has taken the long route. It's perfect. And I feel like the world is counting you out. The odds are very much against you. I think you're, as of right now, plus 700. This feels like
Jesus.
Right? But isn't it great? Doesn't it feel like this is the way it has to be?
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, everyone talks about the losses. And stuff like that. Like, all right, I got 13 losses. That's 13 lessons. That's mm-hmm. how Mark talks about it. It's 13 lessons. But in my last 18 fights, I'm 16-2. So, I mean, I've had a whole nother career. I got in my last 18 fights, I've done better than the most of the division. So, you know, it depends on how you want to look at it, you know, and I'm definitely up against a big challenge here. And I'm not unaware of that, and I'm okay with it. You know what I mean? Like, I believe in myself, and I believe in Mark, and I know that the things that we have picked out in John's game and just the expertise and everyone that's around this, like, we're not gonna in the preparation, we're not gonna make any mistakes, and whatever happens in the fight happens, but I'm going to go in there and I'm not going to quit on myself. I'm not going to give up on myself. I'm going to do everything that my coaches want me to do. And, you know, that's really all you can do. Like, I'm going there and fight my guts off. And I think that we have the answer. I really, really believe that we have the answer.
Yeah. I'm looking at the odds right now, by the way, plus 700 minus 1000 for John Jones. Are you getting no respect here? Do you feel like this is insane?
Yeah, that's a little crazy. I think that, I think that anytime you have a person who fights like I fight, you know, it's pretty fair to say that, you know, I'm not going to go anywhere. Like, John's not going to bully me out of there. Like, I think we all can agree that's not going to happen. And anybody that has two arms and two legs, I think deserves better odds than that. I mean, it's not like I'm unable. It's not like I don't have the ability to drop a hammer on John and set him right out on his ass. Like, that's very possible. And he knows that.
When you fight John Jones on March 2nd, do you think that you will be fighting a clean fighter?
I don't know. I think that the definition of a clean fighter has gotten mighty gray in the last 6 months. And it didn't used to be like that. It used to be pretty black and white. If you had a banned substance in your body, you were dirty and you were cheating. But for whatever reason, that's not the narrative that everyone is going by anymore. So I honestly don't care at this point. I've got what I've been working for my entire career, and it's going to take more than John Jones's pee to change my mind. You know what I mean? I'm in there, I'm going, and it wouldn't matter what you told me walking, like, right now, there's nothing that would stop me from fighting John Jones. If you said that he was hiding a shiv in his jock strap, I'm still going in.
There are some people, most notably Daniel Cormier, who believe that when John Jones is clean, he is a completely different fighter. He's the John Jones, famous example now is the OSP fight, if you will. Do you subscribe to that notion that when he is 100% clean, that he is not as good as he is and that it is very noticeable in his fights?
Yeah, I can definitely, I can agree with that. But he also, like, every time that that happens, John is also coming off a long layoff as well. So the OSP thing, he's coming off a suspension. You can either look at it and say he's coming off of a long layoff and he's got a little bit of ring rust, or you can say he's been suspended, so he's definitely not using. I mean, that happened with OSP and with Gustafson. So, you know, I don't know. Honestly, at this point, that's what's so crazy. Like, had you asked me this before all this other, you know, stuff was going on, I would have been super black and white with you and say, no, John's using this and he's, you know, and he's cheating and he's dirty and it's simple. But like, everything is created. They've created this allure of just like this gray area. Like, well, he's got steroids in his system or the metabolites from the steroids, but he didn't really use them though. Like, I don't, it almost, even as smart as I am, it's almost like pulling the wool over my eyes a little bit.
Okay. So I remember when we spoke a couple of weeks ago, you said you weren't all that impressed with his performance. Are you chalking that up to the layoff and or him being clean? And do you expect to see a better John Jones on March 2nd?
I'm training as if I'm going to see the best John Jones we've ever seen. But I hope the worst one shows up, to be honest with you. I've never said I wanted to win a world title off of the best performance John Jones ever had. I never said that. If he trips and falls and I leave there with a world title, I'm good with it. So I'm training for the best and hoping that we see something similar, but I don't know if it was that he's clean now or if it was the layoff or, but it was something. And I'm really excited to find out what it was.
What happens to your life if you beat John Jones?
I mean, personally, probably not a whole lot. I'm going to do the same thing I always do, man. I'm even where I'm at now is drastically different from where I was a year ago. And not a whole lot on the personal life side of it has changed. You know, I make more money and I got cooler shit.
But, yeah, that's a big deal, no?
Yeah, it's fun. It's cool to have nice things and to be able to take your family places and buy your kids whatever you want, but as far as my, you know, I got the same group of friends. I got the, you know, I've been with the same girl for 10 years. Nothing changes for me, you know.
I was unaware of an issue between you and Luke Rockhold. What's going on there? I've been noticing some heat between you two. What's the story?
So before I got the fight.
Yeah.
Probably right after John fought. It would have been immediately afterwards. He said just a bunch of really terrible things, you know, and honestly, I got pretty thick skin. There's not a lot that hurts my feelings, but the fact of like who it was coming from and just the way he was saying it just really got under my skin. And he was just talking about how terrible I was and that I was a bum and that I was trash. But I didn't say anything or I couldn't say anything because I knew we were trying to get a fight with John. And I knew that if I responded, it was going to take fire. So I didn't say anything. I didn't want to talk myself out of a title fight and into a fight with Luke Rockhold. So I didn't say anything. And then I got the fight and he went on, Luke Thomas's show and just ran me through the cleaners again, you know, just talking about how amazing it is that I got a title shot. And that just shows how terrible the division is and just really disparaging, just terrible things. And saying that I wasn't going to last one round with John Jones and how being an arrogant prick, you know? So I just went off, you know, I was on the Luke Thomas show like 30 or 40 minutes later and I just lost it. You know, I'm just so sick of, you know, I put John Jones in that same category. I'm just sick of people treating other people bad. Like I don't know John Jones. I don't know Luke Rockhold. I've never said anything about them, like who they are as a person. I've never talked about Luke Rockhold. Every time you and I talk, or any interview I do, I always give John Jones every single bit of credit that he deserves. I have no problem bringing up his professional hiccups. but I've never talked about him personally, and I've never talked about Luke Rockhold ever. Never happened. So I just don't – I don't know where this world is these days. Where, like, someone like me could work so hard and sacrifice everything that I've sacrificed and lost the things that I've lost and try to be a motivating figure to people to not give up and to keep chasing your dreams. And then when I get it, just run me into the ground like I'm some piece of shit and you're just better than me, and then look down your nose at me. Like, especially when you've lost two out of your last three fights by vicious knockouts, and you know, like, you can't even make it through training camp. Like, I'm out here busting my butt, killing myself, trying to make it, and guys like, you know, arrogant pricks like Rockhold with polo deals and Gucci underwear, like, are like bringing me down. Like, I didn't do anything to you. I'm trying to make my own way, you know, and I'm trying to change my life here. And you know, the headlines that are reading all across the screens are Luke Rockhold thinks Anthony Smith is a bum. Like how is that right? Like, how, you don't hear NFL guys talk about each other like that. You don't hear guys, you know, in hockey do a bunch of interviews about how terrible individuals are. Like, if you don't believe that I deserve the shot, then why don't you go win a fight and come do something about it?
Well said. So perhaps after this is someone you'd like to settle the score with at this point, right? He has gotten under your skin enough to the point where I think that you'd like to fight him at some point down the line.
Win, lose, or draw, Luke Rockhold's next for me.
Okay.
I just think that sometimes the balance in life needs to be shifted, and sometimes people need to get what they deserve.
I know this is an impossible question to end with, but I'll ask it anyway. I'll ask the same question that I asked Mark. How do you beat Jon Jones? Have you figured it out yet, or is it too? You've probably been thinking about this for a while. This is a man who you can't really necessarily go on online, Fight Pass, YouTube, whatever, and look at film of, oh, he looked really vulnerable in that situation. How do you figure out the guy who's really never been figured out?
You know, I don't know if he's never been figured out or if people just can't execute on it.
Oh.
Because we found lots of holes and tendencies. Like, he's got a lot of them, actually.
Can you give us one or two? Well, what are they?
I can't do that, Errol. Okay. That's not fair. Right. That's not fair. John, if it was anyone but John, I would just tell you exactly what I was going to do.
Fair enough.
But he's so smart, you know, and you have to outthink John, and you can't let him bully you. You can't let him run you over in there. Like, mentally, you can't let him run you over. If he gets one on, you know, if he hits you hard or he takes you down, or like, you can't let that affect you, because John, he feeds off of that stuff. He feeds off of, you know, you can feel when you got someone broken a little bit, or when they figured out that they're going to lose that situation, and you can just never concede. You can never concede to John. You can't, like Gustafson, he got taken down and he kind of conceded that was just where they were going to be for a while. And you can't do that with someone like John. You can't concede any positions with him.
Great stuff, Anthony. I'm really happy for you. Congrats on getting the fight. Good luck the next 2 months or so preparing for the fight. What a story this is. It's very well deserved. You give us all hope that, you know, it doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down, you can still go out there and accomplish your dreams. A lot of people, I think, are going to be backing you and rooting for you on March 2nd. Appreciate this very much, Anthony. Thanks so much.
Take care, Ariel.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, Anthony Lionheart Smith. Again, one of the great guys in this sport. If you can't get behind that story, what this man has been through, all the ups and downs, less than a year ago, losing viciously to Thiago Santos. Now here we are in January of 2019. He's preparing for a shot against Jon Jones, March 2nd in Las Vegas. This is great stuff. This is the stuff dreams are made of. It's David versus Goliath. It's the perfect fight. It really is. I love it. All right, that's March 2nd. March 9th. UFC's in Wichita, Kansas, and the main event for that card is Junior Dos Santos against Derek Lewis. I haven't talked to Derek Lewis in a long time. Derek Lewis, I thought, went all Hollywood on us, went all bougie on us, and I can't reach the guy for months and months and months. And now look who it is, Derek Lewis, who has been on my show over the past few months since I made the move to ESPN, and consistently disparaged my Skype connection, my studio, all that and then some. Look at me now, Derek. What do you have to say? Can you see me? What do you got?
Nah. The connection is terrible. It looked like you're using Android.
My connection looks great. What's up with your connection? Where are you? Is it got a bunker or something? What's going on? Are you in your new mansion? Did you not set up the internet yet?
No, I'm at the gym.
Oh, you're at the gym.
At the rope for my training, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'd like to say you never look better, but I can hardly see you. It's like you're in like an 8-bit video game here. But can you see me now? Can you actually see me?
Yeah, I can see your damn nose is blocking the damn TV screen.
Look at this. Come on. We've made it, right? I wanted to have you on this first episode with the new studio.
Nah, you should have been paying me then. Send me a check.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Bougie Derek. All of a sudden, Hollywood. It's impossible. How come? Where did you go over the last couple months, Derek? Why could we not find you? Where did you disappear?
I've been trying to crack my whip on my builder. I've been building my home.
And, oh.
They finally finished in December, at the end of December. And so I've just been chilling at my house now and doing nothing.
So you got a new home?
Yes.
Is it a mansion? Is it huge? Is it massive?
It's a baby mansion, though.
That's
right. It's pretty big. I'm comfortable with it. Just another investment I'm doing. This year right here, that's all I want to do, just buy homes and lease it out.
Oh, okay. But this one you're going to actually live in?
Yes.
Okay. I saw actually a picture that you posted on Instagram, the whole 10-year challenge thing. Man, you've come a long way. Was that your car? What car were you standing next to, the one from 2019?
Yeah, it was a Buick. My Buick I had. I had no insurance. I ain't had a driver license or anything back then. So I was just getting by. But the police wound up taking that one whenever I got pulled over because I didn't have the money to get it out of the impound. I told them they could have it.
Wait, that car, the one that you're standing next to in the picture?
Yeah, the Buick.
No, it's like a sports car, right?
No, not that one. I'm talking about the 10 years ago.
No, I'm talking about the one from now.
Yeah. What about it?
Yeah, what is it? I'm not a sports car guy, but it looked really nice.
Oh, it's a Huracan.
Oh, look at you.
Mercedes GTS.
That's yours?
Yes.
Well done.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's been a good year. You went away, right? Didn't you take some time off? You went on vacation after the DC fight, correct?
Yeah, we was planning on going to Dubai, but I'm just staying off, taking a trip to Austin.
Okay.
Kicking it out there for a few days.
Why Dubai?
Because it's too cold here. At the time, it was too cold, but now like 60, 70 degree weather.
Okay.
This week.
Did you do a movie as well?
I was supposed to start shooting a movie next month. I did the TV show already. That's going to be airing next month as well.
Oh, what's happening? The connection's a little wonky. You said that.
Joe, this is your Android.
Yeah, no, it can't be me. I mean, this is state of the art right here. It's got to be you. We've never done an interview from the gym, I think, so I'm not really 100%. Let me fight through it quickly, and then we'll see if it persists. The TV show is what? What's it called?
Black Lightning.
Black Lightning. Where does that air?
CW.
Oh,
this should be airing pretty soon. No, they cut me a check already, so I'm not worried about it. What time is going to air, when it's going to air.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't care. Just keep watching CW every day. It'll probably come up sooner. Like, I don't know.
Do you have a speaking part?
Yeah, I got a couple of words I'm saying there. Got a couple of action scenes as well.
My man, look at you. I love it. It's great. This is all as a result of what happened at UFC 229, right? You're not getting this if you don't win that fight.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably what it is, 229, yeah. It probably would be even bigger if it was on, if I would have won the fight at 230. But,
sure.
We'll keep grinding and we'll see what happens the next time we go around.
Derek, it's a bit hard to hear from you. Can we call you on your phone? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, we're going to call your cell phone now because it's a little hard to hear from Derek as we're watching the highlights of his win over Alexander Volkov. So ironic that Derek Lewis has been giving me grief over the past few months that my Skype connection, that my studio was lackluster. And now here we are. I'm about to have him on. I'm so excited that he's finally going to see it all. And he comes on with that. Come on, Derek.
up your game. What happened to you? What happened to us? Of course, I haven't talked to Derek since UFC 230 when he fought DC a month after that fight against Alexander Volkov, when his entire life changed, when everything changed. You got the Popeyes deal. Remember that? Everyone eats for free, gets a lifetime deal. And then he kind of disappeared. Rightfully so. A lot happened. Let's see if he's there. Derek, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. There he is. Derek, how many times have you taken advantage of the lifetime Popeyes deal that you got as a result of the whole DC fight?
I haven't won yet. They gave me, they told me I got to go up there to that location and pick up the card, but I haven't went to that location yet. Haven't had Popeyes either yet.
Wow, why?
What do you mean, why?
Why haven't you taken advantage? It was like 2.5 months ago.
Sure, I've been lazy. I ain't even feel like doing nothing.
But it's free food.
I ain't even feel like eating Popeyes. Yeah, I know, but... You know, somehow we still get food stamps too, so we finesse the system and still get food stamps. So
no, you don't.
We just been going grocery shopping.
You still get food stamps? Why?
What do you mean, why? You gotta take advantage of everything.
They don't know
everybody
that
you're else taking advantage in the system.
They don't know you're an international celebrity, that the world knows you, that you fought on pay-per-view, that you got the 600,000 Instagram followers overnight.
No, I use a different name when I fill all that. I fill that application, I use a different name.
What name do you use?
Don't worry about all that. Can't tell you. I already told you enough.
Has life really changed for you? Like, do you sense a difference in the way people treat you and talk to you?
Not really. It's still the same. I'm still the same person I was before I even got money. You know, so I ain't changing. And I still got the same friends. I still do the same stuff, you know. Ain't nothing changed about me. People still treat me the same.
Okay. I'm happy to hear that. Because sometimes when you get all, you know, rich and famous, people treat you differently usually.
Yeah, well, of course, family members do that.
Yeah. Do you get that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But friends, my friends are the same, but my family members, they don't want changed on me.
What, like how?
Look, we can't go through all this right now. I know you're trying to get an Oprah segment out of me, but we can't go through all this right now.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was just curious.
Things I can't say.
All right, fair enough. It's just been a while since we talked.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, for a while I thought we were never going to talk again. It was so hard to get in touch. Poor Lou, I was hitting him up every week to talk to you.
Yeah, there's a lot of censor stuff now since, you know, ESPN can't talk to you like I want to.
Oh, stop it. You can do whatever you want. You always have a home here, Derek. Can I ask, have you watched the fight against DC?
No, I haven't.
Do you have any interest in doing so at any point?
Yeah, I will. I'll probably watch it after this fight.
Oh, after the fight?
Depends on how it goes. Yeah, after this one, then I'll watch it.
Why not before?
Because this is a hard fight to watch, you know?
Right.
Emotionally, you know?
You took that loss hard?
Yeah, I did, because I believe I trained hard like I was supposed to for that fight. There was no excuse on my part. You know, I thought we would go into the later rounds or what, but I know he didn't train as hard like he was supposed to either for the fight. And I wound up losing to a guy that didn't really train that much on short notice.
Being in there with DC, is it different than preparing for him in the sense, like, is he a lot tougher than you expected?
Oh, not at all. I thought he would be stronger than what I've seen him in his previous fight, but he wasn't as strong like I thought he was.
Really?
I thought he would be able to take me down and, like, hold me down and stuff like that, and that wasn't the case.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I believe that he's way more technical than I was. Anyways, everyone knew that. If I was fighting like a regular wrestler that wasn't an Olympic wrestler, I believe that I would still have a better shot of stopping the takedown. Because I did everything I could do, try to stop the takedown, but he still took me down.
Do you think that if you had more time to prepare for that fight, you win?
You know, I'm stuck in my old ways because I would still be trying to get up the same way like I've been doing for years. You know, even though I know the right way to get up, but I just feel more comfortable of getting up the way I do, like exposing my back and taking, letting the guy take my back and me standing straight up like I do.
And you can't do that against someone like DC.
Yeah, I knew we couldn't do that. My coach even told me that we would have to be careful getting up like that.
Mm.
And the first time, whenever I did it, I kind of hesitated of doing it. Then the last time, whenever I did it, I didn't do the explosive like I was supposed to, and I was really hesitating of doing it like that, too. And that's whenever he had his time to put the rear neck on. If I would have did it more explosive like I usually do, then it would have been real hard for him to put the choke on.
Throughout your entire career, every time I've asked you about the title fights, you've always said, nah, you know, I don't care, all that stuff and more. You've always had the right things to say. But now that you have been in a title fight and you could almost taste it, do you care? Do you want to get back there? Do you want to get that belt?
It's like I still, like, to this day, it's like, it was crazy. I was fighting for the title. I think about that. It's like, it didn't feel like I was fighting for the title. That's what it didn't feel like. I was fighting for a belt. It didn't feel like the atmosphere, the mood I was in, it didn't seem like it was a title fight.
Why not?
It felt different to me. I don't know. It just felt different. Just like it felt just like a regular fight. It didn't feel like a title fight.
Is that a good thing?
The fight just didn't feel like it.
Is that good?
It just felt like a normal fight to me.
Okay.
So I guess it was good.
Yeah. Didn't feel like a bigger deal. In other words, the moment didn't get to you.
No, not at all.
And so DC...
The moment already got to me, like in my first fight, my first UFC fight, that's whenever I felt like all the hard work and all the haters saying that I would never make it to the UFC and this and that. That's that moment right there, it got to me, especially hearing Bruce Buffer call my name and seeing Joe Rogan there, then Dana White, and just being inside the octagon at that moment. That was more overwhelming than my title fight.
So now you come back against JDS. I had heard for the longest time that the front runner to face you next was Alistair Overeem. Did you hear the same? And if so, how did we go from Overeem to JDS?
I heard Overeem, I heard Stipe. I told them I wanted some time off. They was already trying to book me in January.
Whoa.
They tried to book me first fight on the ESPN card with Stipe. I told them, I just told them I wanted some time off, and already fighting JD, Steve, they wanted me to fight Stipe on short notice, and I said, I just wanted some time off. I would still fight Stipe, but not right now. Not so soon.
Right.
Especially coming fighting a guy that was like DC, more of a wrestler than going into a fight fighting Stipe. And I wanted some time off. Then I kind of still feel like this fight with JDS is kind of too soon as well.
So why are you taking it?
Because it came to me already twice for me to fight someone. Well, actually, it was just Stipe. But I just heard rumors that Overeem won, so.
Yeah. He even said he didn't think that you're funny. He was on the show. Did you see these clips of him saying he doesn't think you're funny? He thinks the jokes aren't good. Did you see this stuff?
Oh, I don't care if he don't think I'm funny. It's just the way I am. And plus, if I got knocked out how many times he did, of course, I wouldn't have a sense of him either. So I would just be trying to remember what the last thing I ate.
Yes. But do you like this JDS matchup?
Yeah, I like this matchup. Yeah. I like the Stipe matchup, too, and the Overeem matchup. I just wanted some time. If they would have gave me Stipe the same time as JBS, then I would have took it. But I couldn't fight. I just fought November, December. Then they wanted me to fight again in January.
Yeah, that's too much.
Big fights.
Right. You need some time. Mentally, physically, you need a break.
Yeah, and I already fought four times last year.
What would have been an ideal month for you to return if you had your way?
April.
Okay. So, one month early.
Would have been perfect, yeah.
Have you ever been to Wichita?
Training in the cold. No, I haven't been there.
Are you excited to go there?
No, I'm not.
Why not?
Even Alice in Wonderland, she ain't going to keep her ass over there. What I look like going over there. She ain't going to be there.
Is it Alice in Wonderland? Or is it the Wizard of Oz? The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, Wizard of Oz. What I look like trying to stay over there.
Well, at least, you know, for the longest time, they were sending you all over the world, like to the most remote places possible. At least it's not too far of a flight from Houston, I would imagine.
Yeah. I got to go there next Wednesday. Well, actually, this Wednesday.
To do media.
Yeah.
All right. Man, I thought you were, you know, at this point, with like all your Instagram followers and all your sponsorships and your cars and stuff, if I'm being honest, I thought you were a bit above that. Like, you didn't have to do those things.
No, it doesn't matter.
No.
The new contract, that's fine. I don't mind doing nothing.
You're still the same old Derek.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I missed you, Derek.
Hey, man, don't change your voice and talk like that. Sound like a fruit. I'm getting Me Too on your ass.
Stop. I'm going Me Too. I can't believe I made a point. Whenever we move to this new studio, I have to have Derek Lewis on for all the grief that you gave me over the last few months. And now you come with your shoddy internet? I mean, really, Derek, I have to say I'm disappointed in you now.
Hey, I don't care. Don't come at me with no sexual harassment, dog.
No, I'm good. But I'm happy everything's good. You're doing well. You're living the dream. That picture was awesome that you posted. You're still very active. Although, you know what? You haven't posted on Twitter in like 3-4 months. What's happened to you over there? Are you on a Twitter timeout, a boycott?
No, there's a lot of porn on Twitter now. You see that? It's crazy. They're letting people post porn on there.
What? Say it again.
There's a lot of porn on Twitter nowadays.
Oh, okay. So you're just staying with Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Well, it's still good to talk to you after all this time. I'm happy you haven't forgotten about the little people. And please, next time we have you on, let's do it from home so that you can actually see me, I see you, you know, just like the old days.
For what? Your damn nose blocked the whole screen anyway. Can you see?
Oh, and by the way, congratulations on your Promo of the Year award. I know that meant a lot to you.
Yeah, okay. Okay. That ain't nothing, man.
All right. Well, the trophy is in the mail.
Sending me a trophy for Promo of the Year. What kind of trophy?
It's this one right over here. It's the Helwani Nose Trophy, the prestigious Helwani Nose Award.
Oh, man, I don't want that shit.
No, you do. Trust me, you do.
No, I don't want.
You may not have a UFC title, but you got one of these bad boys. And dare I say, it means a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, I keep it outside. That's cool. You can send it.
Okay. Thank you, Derek. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
All right. Much love. There he is, the Black Beast himself, Derek Lewis. Always great to catch up with him. He returns on March 9th in Wichita, Kansas. Part of a very busy first half of 2019 for the UFC. Look at this. Look at this, what we got over here. Corporate Jake getting it done. I mean, look at that. You got a whole schedule and everything. January 19th, Brooklyn. You've got the card in Fortaleza, Brazil on February 2nd, February 9th. We're going to Melbourne. Then we got February 17th in Phoenix, first ESPN card. Then we've got February 23rd, the debut in Prague, Czech Republic. March 2nd, UFC 235. Then we've got March 9th in Wichita. Then we've got March 16th in London. March 23rd, TBD. March 30th, Philadelphia. The Illadelph. March 2nd, circle that one. We talked to the co-main event, Kamaru Usman. We talked to the main event, Anthony Smith. One of the big fights on the card is the return of Cody No Love Garbrandt. Yes, he is back. Finally, he's fighting Pedro Munhoz in a very important fight at 135 pounds. And now Cody joins us on the phone. Been a while since we talked to him. Cody, how are you?
I'm great, man. Thanks for having me.
It's been my friend. Where you been?
It's been a while, man. I've just been, enjoying the fatherhood, you know, enjoying my son, enjoying time in the gym, and just, you know, getting back to myself. You know, that's all it is just, you know, finding that balance. And it's been great, you know, reevaluating a lot of things, you know, working on things outside of training, outside of my career, my life, you know, just getting everything in order. I'm excited. I'm excited to be in fight camp. I'm excited to be back on the grind and back in the, you know, in the fight camp, just in the grind. I'm excited to fight Pedro Munhoz. It's a great card, March 2nd, UFC 235. A lot of a great talent on the card as well. So very excited to fight back in Vegas. I love it out there.
Did you feel like you needed some time off after the TJ fight in August? Did you feel like you needed a reset?
You know what, man? I jumped back in both camps, you know, like from injury and stressing my body a lot to try to get in shape for the fight. So I just feel like I just never let myself catch up to the stress that I was putting on my body, you know, after, you know, all these procedures I was getting and injuries that I was accumulating. I just needed a little mental break, you know, to kind of just reset and refocus. And, you know, that was one of probably the best things I was able to do for my career moving forward. You know, I'm 27 years old. I have some of my best performances to date to showcase, to go out there and, you know, capitalize on the opportunity. And just every fight's, you know, your Super Bowl. So I get to prepare for Super Bowl every fight. And, you know, it's great to go against Pedro Munhoz. He's a tough Brazilian world champion, you know, black belt. His, you know, striking has been up to par. He's been knocking some people out. So he's got a lot of hype around him. So I'm excited for this fight and this challenge with him.
In hindsight, do you feel like it would have helped you in between the two TJ fights to get another fight in there to get your groove, your confidence up before going into a title fight again? Do you wish it went down that way?
No, you know, I'm a fight. You know, they call me and tell me to fight. You know, we were supposed to fight on short notice, TJ in March. And, you know, that's what the UFC said. Hey, you're getting the rematch. I won't be in March. TJ didn't want it then. He wants more time. So they planned it for August. I mean, how that went, you know, TJ got the best of me in both fights. But, you know, I haven't, you know, showcased my skills. You know, he's a great competitor. I'm not taking nothing against him. But, you know, I'm excited to get back. And I'm climbing the mountain. I'm the hunter. I'm on the hunt. You know, I didn't let my dreams get buried. You know what I mean? I didn't let my dreams get buried with self-doubt and loss and feel of failure. You know what I mean? It's only pushed me forward. You know, I've grown a lot because both of those fights, you know, I come out on the wrong end of them, but that happens, man. You're in there and you're fighting one, you know, some of the best guys in the world with France gloves on. It's little mistakes that you make. And, that was on me, you know, so I went back to the drawing board and, you know, just been perfecting my craft, going in there, working on my skills every day, you know, just becoming a better martial artist. You know, just going in there and then really challenge myself mentally and physically to push each day and get better. And, you know, with that, also enjoying the journey. You know what I mean? I felt like I kind of got wrapped up in a lot of things that were keeping my focus from having fun. You know what I mean? That's what I love fighting. It's been in my blood. It's been, you know, it's been in my family. It's just, honestly, I'm blessed with this passion that I was given. You know what I mean? Now to have the courage to chase it. I chased it all the way to being a world champion and had fun with it. You know, and, you know, injuries played a plague, you know, but that happens. That's life. And, you know, just got, you know, challenged in different ways, you know, leading up to those title fights, you know. And like I said, TJ is a great competitor, a great martial artist. He's all in, you know, he's all in this sport. And it's great, you know, hopefully that, you know, the fight will go well this weekend. And, you know, I'm just focusing on myself, getting back in the win column and climbing that mountain again, cleaning out the division and getting back to being on top, because that's honestly what makes me happy is being inside the gym and just fighting. You know, as far as many times you try to walk away from it or you know, have doubts, you know, that self-doubt, you can't get buried. You know, I didn't let myself get buried with the dirt. You know, I just kept brushing myself on as it started piling on and, you know, broke through. And, you know, it's necessary for me to go after my dreams. It's necessary. And I truly believe that 2019 is my year to be healthy and whole. I just have a good feeling about this, this year, where our team's at, where I'm at mentally and physically, going inside of this camp and just going out there and proving myself. You know, I don't care what anyone else says or thinks, or it's me at the end of the night that, you know, I have to wake up with myself and go to sleep with myself, you know, my thoughts, you know, and that I didn't do any shortcuts, you know, no stone unturned. And that's what we're doing. We're gearing up to go to battle and just taking that mentality in there and using this momentum that I'm given.
When you talk about, you know, having fun again and remembering why you got into this, looking back, you know, the whole feud with TJ and all the drama and the animosity, did that get to be a little too much? Like, did that take your mind away from what you wanted to go do? You know, when you fought, we were talking earlier about the fight against Dominic Cruz, like you were on point. That was incredible. That's one of the greatest performances in a title fight I ever saw. And yes, there was some bad blood there, but it was on a whole different level with TJ. Looking back, did it get to just be too much going into those fights? Too personal?
You know, I think with Dominic, it was a lot of the thing of the not knowing, you know, not knowing what to expect in there. With TJ, I kind of knew what to expect in there. Not that I was overconfident or over cocky. I just didn't respect TJ on a level. And you have to respect everyone in there. You know, you're fighting with 4 ounce gloves on, you know, and that just goes from training with them and just knowing what I was able to do. And you know, he's evolved. I've evolved. And, you know, I'm excited. Just having that feeling of I might get fucked up in here. You know what I mean? Like, we'll make you fight a little bit different. You know what I mean? Mm. You know, like getting back into the corner, you know, you're going to fight your way out. And that's what I felt like with Dom. You know, he's one of the best martial artists, bantamweights. You know what I mean? He's a real deal. His movement, you know, his unorthodox style. And I mean, just what he's been overcome, you know, injuries and coming back and being on top and then, you know, battling back, you know, he's been through a lot. So he's definitely mentally and physically, you know, he's all in, you know, be the best. That's why he's one of the best martial artists. And I knew what I was up against, you know, going in there. So I don't know, man. Maybe it took a little away from a little bit of it, but I wouldn't change it. You know, I learned a lot from it and just, you know, go in there and you just have fun with the journey and go in there and fight. You know, I'm a fighter and not looking into it. I look into it too much, like, oh, you know, kind of crippled us. We knew what TJ was doing and what he, you know, his setups, and I was too focused on him instead of myself, you know, letting myself dictate the pace and, you know, looking for this one thing TJ does with this combo and trying to set it and go from there when I just fight, you know. And I'm in flow state, you know, that's when I fight out there, and that's what you got with Dominic Cruz, is just a flow state, just going in there, having fun, moving around, taking some shots, you know, and just, you know, keeping that momentum up, you know, not trying to go in there, like, oh, I got him hurt. Every time I hit TJ, his eyes roll back on his head. I hit him with a jab, and, you know, eyes roll back, and I was like, all right, you know, I had him hurt, and I should have set him down a little bit. And, you know, it's hindsight 2020 watching the fight and going over it again, but son of a bitch, I'm coming for him. I'm coming for everyone in that division, and I'm still a bad motherfucker, and I'm hungry, you know, whoever they put in front of me, my adversary, I'm coming back to the old no love, and that's, you know, getting them hurt, taking them apart, and you know, then taking them out, as my old coach would say, get them hurt and take them out, and that's a thing, methodical approach, instead of just getting, you know, I know I can knock anybody out, you know, it's falling in love with the dissection of them, you know, getting them hurt, seeing them hurt, and taking them out, and not just trying to rush, and that's the thing that I think that lost me both fights is, you know, maybe a little bit of the, you know, the emotional part, you know, wanting to just knock TJ's jaw off. And, you know, he fought smoothly, fought clean. He covered up when he was hurt, and he had a little bit better defense, and head off the range, you know, things like that. So, he did little things right. You know what I mean? That's what I wasn't doing in camp. You know, he got to be able to do reps and reps and reps and quality reps. And I was just literally coming off injuries and jumping into camp and trying to, like I said, put my body that stress to go in and do that, where I couldn't really train before camp. I like to always, you know, be training and be in the grind. I'm a martial artist in my life. This is what I've done my whole entire life, you know. So when you don't have that, you kind of feel, for myself, I don't have any progress. What am I doing? I don't have any, you know, what's my goals? I couldn't set little goals and big goals, and I was just focused on getting healthy. So that just left me inside of my head too much of doubt, and, you know, my body wasn't moving the way it should have been moving in camp, you know, from the injuries. And, you know, so I just, you know, I'm very thankful and fortunate. I have great physical therapists, strength and conditioning coaches, Russ Dunning, Amadeo Novello, that have, you know, single-handedly just helped me transform into a different fighter. I mean, movement-wise, recovery-wise, I'm just learning, man. That's what it's about. Like I said, I'm 27 years old. I'm learning all about, you know, recovery and you know, heart rates and things, you know, to do a different kind of training. So I'm so excited for the next, you know, 5 years of my career, or however long I stay in and stay in fighting and stay hungry for it.
Did you break your hand in that fight against TJ, the second one?
both the first time and the second time, man. It's been a little bit of a plague, you know.
Same hand,
but same hand. But it's good. It's been, man. Knock on wood. It's been heavy. It's been fast, and it's been ready to get in there and strap those UFC gloves on and put some chin music on old Pedro. So I'm excited for it. I'm excited.
Did you have surgery after the second one?
We were planned for surgery. Kind of things happened. They wanted to take out the plate that I had in my hand. It had been a year off, and then going back. And he was like, "No, I can't do another year off." You know what I mean? I had 11 months out, almost a whole year from the cruise fight for the first TJ fight, and I just can't do that, man. The doctor said it would be a disservice to me right now. They wanted to go and take a little piece of the bone that was broken by the wrist out, why they did the whole plate removal, and then ground up bones and fill in the holes. So they said, you know, something that you're just going to just live with. They gave me, a steroid shot, a cortisone shot to kind of numb it up. And I've just been taking a lot of precautions, you know, with my hand. Been wrapping it, you know, heavily, you know, doing rehab with it, and it's great, man. It's probably as strong as it's ever been.
Okay. And that is very good to hear, because I think that there was some doubt that you would be, or some questions, whether you'd be out for longer. So when I found out that you were coming back in March, that was obviously great news. When you beat Dominic, Cody, your life turned upside down. You became one of the faces of the UFC. You got all these sponsorship deals and the book and all that stuff and more. Did you learn any lessons about that experience, about what it's like being a champion? It's a much different life, is it not? And you know that you're going to get back in there and you're going to try to go for that belt again, as you just said. Did you learn anything about being a champion for the first time that you'd like to implement once you get that belt back?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. You know, just enjoying it, enjoying being the champion. You know, a lot of, you know, pressure comes with being the best. You know what I mean? And then I wasn't able to grind the way that I should have grinded, the way that I should have been in the gym and been hungry, been on top of the mountain. Like, all you motherfuckers, come get this. I just climbed up here and I stole it from everybody. You know, I'm on the mountain, come get it. I couldn't do that. I couldn't put myself in that mindset. I couldn't look past what I was facing and the injury. You know, I was so focused on just getting healthy, and then I got healthy. I was like, all right, fuck, we're in fight camp. Now we go defend it. You know, so it was just like a lot of doubt. You know what I mean? Like I was speaking about earlier, I didn't let the dirt completely cover my dreams, you know, and get buried in it. You know, I kept shrugging it off and just, like I said, I just couldn't get any momentum going, you know? So I know next time when I get this fight, you know, this win over Pedro on March 2nd, I just use that momentum and keep climbing and climbing, just like I did when I was, you know, had the rise of the champion to be the best, you know? So just really, man, to be completely honest with you, just value it more when you have it, because it can be gone like that. You know, everyone's so good, everyone's so tough. You know what I mean? It's the skill level. I think the bantamweight is one of the most stacked divisions in the UFC. Guys are fast, they're strong, they're well-rounded. You know, but I'm excited to go out there and show Pedro Munhoz what kind of level that I'm on. And not even just show him, just show, prove to myself what kind of level I'm on. And that's the level you'll get, is the high level, and that's the best me you're going to get March 2nd. You know, I feel like I'm recharged, man. I've just been recharged, and I literally have so much motivation and you know, things driving me to get back to the top that it's on me. You know what I mean? It's all on me.
And I know prior to the second TJ fight, you were talking about going down to flyweight. You were talking about challenging for that second belt. Is it hard for you this week to see TJ doing what you were trying to do?
You know what? No, man. He's taking the opportunity that he's worked for. You know what I mean? I can't discredit him or be mad at him or, you know, have any anger towards him. He's went and capitalized on the opportunity that life gave him. And, you know, happy for him. Good for him. Go out there and and B, you say you're the pound for pound. You know, that's just how good I am. I truly believe I am the best in the world. I can't wait to go out there and showcase that. But going back to the Henry and TJ fight, good for them. You know, good for them to go out there and, put on a fight. I like when champions versus champions go along. It's nice, you know, TJ going in there and dedicating himself to cut the extra 10 pounds to go down to, you know, Henry's class, who he just had a phenomenal win over, you know, the pound for pound, you know, Mighty Mouse. You know, I'm excited for that fight, man. I'm going to be tuning in, you know. I'm going to be tuning in and watching and seeing. I just don't see that the weight cut will help TJ. I don't think it's only going to hinder him, you know. You know, I think that Henry's going to take this fight.
You think he stops him?
I think he stops, man. I think that, you know, it's you got to think, man. It's an extra 10 pounds that you're taking off you, and you're going in there and fighting someone that's been there at 25. It's fought there. It's been, you know, rocked, been hit, been, you know, been taking punches at 25. Why the cut weight? Now, TJ's cutting all the way down. I know he works with a good strength conditioning coach, and they have his, you know, he's always in shape. He's always, you know, cut up to the gill with whatever special performances he's on, you know. But, you know, I'm excited for him. I'm excited for them, the guys, to go out there and fight and you know, may the best man win. But I know 135 pounds in my division, but I'm going to sit back and watch this fight and just train for me, you know, grind for my fight and get back in the win column and keep climbing that ladder.
Cody, I think I speak for everyone in the MMA community when I say welcome back. We missed you. And looking forward to seeing you back on March 2nd. This is a great fight at 135 against Pedro Munhoz. I'm very excited to see how you look in your return and glad to hear that you are in a good space, both physically and mentally heading into this return fight. Great to catch up with you. It has been too long. I appreciate you taking out some time and joining us here this afternoon.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me on always, man. It's a great platform to come and speak. I know I've been away for a while and you know, I promise I'll and I'm back, man. I'm back. Like I said, 2019 is my year to be healthy and whole. I truly believe that, and I'm excited to go out there. It's my passion, you know, as far as what we deal with, you know, on the regular basis. We're still humans, and we deal with a lot of the same things that the regular people do. Like I said, we're humans ourselves, and, you know, we're not perfect. You know, we're trying to figure it, make it in this world, you know. And I'm on my way. I'm on my way back. I'm coming home, man. I cannot wait.
Looking
Thank
forward
you.
To it. All the best to you, Cody. We'll talk to you soon. There he is, hey, Cody Garbrandt, stopping by, former UFC bantamweight champion on that big card on March 2nd. So let us go back to the co-main event earlier in the program. We spoke to one Kamaru Usman. Now let us talk to the man who will be facing Kamaru Usman on March 2nd at UFC 235, the reigning defending UFC welterweight champion, a man who is always very kind enough with his time, gracious with his time, Tyron Woodley, stopping by here on the program. Last guest of the day. Tyron, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. I know you're busy, so thanks so much for the time. Tyron, why are you fighting Kamaru Usman on March 2nd and not Colby Covington?
You know what? Those aren't my decisions to make. I'm just the welterweight champion of the world, and when somebody step up and they think they want it, I got to put them down. So Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington, and whoever else, I'm eventually have to fight those guys. This is a order in which UFC wanted to do it, so I'm just going to go out there with it.
Are you disappointed it's not Colby first?
You know, if it was me, which is not me, as I just said before, I would think that the drama and the build-up with Colby is already set and is already there. He already had an interim title around his waist, so I'm not involved with the analytics and the why they make the decisions that they make. But I thought that was already built up. I don't like him. He don't like me. We both fight for ATT. We both are complete opposite on political views. He's a clown. I'm the king. So, you know, I think it made for a great fight. Kamaru Usman, I thought that fight could have been built up a little bit more after the Colby fight, just because we're so respectable to each other and each other's heels and set. And, you know, I just don't see the drama being the same. You know, in this game, it's not just about fighting anymore. It's about entertainment. And I think that would have been a very entertaining deal. So I just don't want Colby to fight somebody and get his ass whooped. And now I can't go to that.
Behind the scenes, did you campaign heavily for Colby?
I can't pin Hillary because, to be honest, I don't think Kobe's that good. And I think if you fight a Ben Askren, I think if you fight a Darren Till, I think if you fight a Kamaru Usman, I think he's going to take an L. If you fight a Pontevedra, I think he's going to take an L. So I want to be the one with his ass. So I was selfishly wanting to do the world some, you know, a favor and shut him the hell up and close his eyes up a little bit.
Did you see any of his interviews last week? He made the rounds.
My God.
What did you?
Unfortunately, I had to call the fucking ambulance because, you know, if you think about the person that was, every time something comes to Cody and he loses this, you know, whatever shenanigans he's doing, now he wants you to feel sorry for him. Like, get out of here. Like, you talk about a whole country and now you want to, like, Redoom threw a boomerang at me and, like, yeah. Like, this is a game. You play on a fire, you get burned. You know, you don't run a show. You ain't the champ. You can't make your calls. And I think he found that out very quickly. Even Conor McGregor had to learn that lesson. Remember the time he didn't show up to the press conference and all that stuff? They had to push that fight back. So if he's gonna learn a lesson, you better believe Quiffington is.
Why is it always so different? Like, the road to making your title fights, every single one of them has always been drama filled, all kinds of ups and downs, the dates, the opponents. Is it ever going to be easy, or is this just the way your title reign is going to go?
They just don't have nobody that can beat me. Number one, that's the primary reason. You know, not that that's the intent to find someone, but they just don't. You know, my toughest competition in a division is behind me. You know, Carlos Condit and Robbie Lawler's of the world. These are people that I looked up to and I watched fight. You know that. I posted a picture on my Instagram, which I was supposed to do a live, but I managed to miss two flights and be stranded in the airport in freaking L.A. and was sleeping on the cot until this morning. So
whoa.
My neck is a little sore right now.
Damn.
But that picture I posted from, you know, 10 years ago is a picture where I am fighting my first Strike Force fight ever in 2009. I am on the opening card, which at that time was not really Strike Force, it was a local promoter. And I had the campaign petition to get on that card. I sold 250 tickets
wow.
to secure my position on that card. And who was the headliner? Robbie Lawler and Jake Shields. How crazy is that?
That is crazy.
I asked Robbie. I was training with Robbie at the time. He wasn't ATT yet. He was left the military camp. Him and Matt Hughes that started their own deal. And I saw him at the Scott Trade Center. And I say, hey, Robbie, man, I heard the Strike Force is coming to St. Louis, man. They can't come here and I not be on the card. Now, this is a young fighter. I hadn't even had a pro fight yet. I was an amateur fighter talking big noise. And guess what? He opened up his phone. He gave me Javier Mendez's number, which I did not know at all. I didn't know who the hell Javier Mendez was. And I randomly had already had a trip set up to AKA through Bob Cook. So I get out there and I'm like, I look on the wall, I'm like, Javier Mendez, I'm like, did I just call you? He said, yeah, you just called me. I'm like, that's weird. I was already coming out here to train, and I called him by being on the card. So in that point, on that same weighing picture you're watching, Scott Coker walked up to me, and Bob Cook said, who do we need to talk to about a six-fight deal with Strike Force? That never happens. Where on the undercard, you know what I mean, somebody comes and asks you to do a deal. I did that deal that night. The night of the weigh-ins, the picture you saw, I did a deal with Strike Force that night. Woke up the next day, fought. I did the deal. It was at 3 o'clock in the morning. Woke up, fought one. It's all been history. So I'm destined to be where I'm at. I'm meant to be where I'm at. And these guys, you know, Kamar Usman, I'm pretty sure, you know, he probably said a little slick talking and that, but you know he respect me. He ain't ready for me yet, though. He needed more time. He ran out of options, and now he's in a position where he's in front of me. And like, damn. You know what I mean? He's not mature enough in the sport yet to be able to understand what I'm going to bring at him.
I've seen one theory thrown out there that the UFC is trying to line up people to beat you. In other words, they don't think Colby can beat you, so they went with Usman. Do you think they think that Usman is the guy and that they are rooting for him to beat you?
You know, I'm just taking myself away from all the conspiracy theories. It don't matter what people think. He can't beat me. Colby can't beat me. Pontevedra can't beat me. Till was supposed to be the one to beat me, right?
Right, right.
Robbie was supposed to be the one to demolish me, and, you know, I had been out for 18 months. And Carlos Condit, they told me nobody want to strike with Carlos, and, you know what I mean? Everybody was supposed to be over my head, but what people don't realize is I'm the only OG left in the game that's still getting better. You know what I mean? I'm the only one that still haven't shown you guys everything I can do. I'm the only one that still got, you know, tricks that I haven't shown in the octagon, and I haven't put on a complete performance where I can really just walk away from the sport after that. I haven't done it yet. So that's dangerous for these guys. Like, at 50%, they can't beat me. What's Kamaru going to do, take me down? He going to outstrike me? He going to punch harder than me? He going to out-strategize me? Have a fight IQ? He is a version of myself 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. I mean, he probably will end up being the fighter, you know. He's very relaxed and composed for someone that hasn't been in the game for a very long time. And, you know, I mentor most of these guys. You know what I mean? They used to call me and ask for advice and stuff like that. That was Usman and Kobe and stuff like that. Now I got a big brother.
And so you have this opportunity on March 2nd. And as we said, you're fighting Kamaru Usman, and it's not going to be Colby. But I've heard a theory thrown out there that Colby will not fight until your fight. He'll just wait. Like, he's being punished. Is it like, you're on timeout? Watch this. Soak it in, and then you're going to fight. Is that what you've been told as well?
I mean, that's not really punishment. I mean, that's him just being able to sit around. I mean, punishment is him having to fight somebody else and risking missing an opportunity, missing a chair. That's what punishment is. I'm not going to act like I'm calling the shots. You know, we know who calls the shots in the UFC. I'm just not that guy yet. Maybe one day I'll eventually grow into that person. But right now, if it was my choice and my wish and my prayer, let him sit out. Let him wait. I'm not going to complain about him waiting and still getting a title shot. Let him wait. Because the whooping that he's going to get from me is going to make him want to never fight again. I guarantee you that.
Where are you at with Usman these days? Because I saw the back and forth between you two, and it got, you know, I think it got a little tense before the fight was made. How do you respect him? Do you feel like he did anything that was below the belt or crossed the line or disrespectful towards you?
No, I mean, he did what he was supposed to do. I mean, he's supposed to petition for the fight. You only get an opportunity, you know, once or twice in your lifetime to be able to fight for a title. Very few people get a second chance or even get a chance at all. So he was supposed to petition. He was supposed to do everything. And he, to his best ability, he almost did it in a respectful way. You know, he didn't come at me real grimy. But it was a certain point where I just got tired of it. Okay, man, time out. I didn't sign a boxing deal, though. So when you say it's done, signed, and ready to go, it's set, that means two people inked the deal. And I was like, shit, unless you and Ali inked the deal, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Because what you got to recognize is it's a lot of negotiation that's going on behind the scenes when it comes down to fight contracts, money, and stuff like that. So when someone's parading around like the deal is set, they're getting the fans all excited. It kind of takes away a little bit of your negotiating power because right at that moment in time, according to the poll that you did, according to the poll that I did, according to everybody, 80% or more people want to see me fight Kobe. So if I'm going to fight Usman, and that's not the fight that quote-unquote the people want to see, I think it's fair to say I should make a little bit more money in that fight. So I was a little bit more frustrated that he was doing what he was doing, but it was kind of almost fucking up my money. So it got to the point where he started kind of bumping the gums to a point, and, you know, then I had to check him a little bit. But then, you know, I actually grappled him after that. And as a man, he said, you know what, this is what I was told, and we squashed it. But at the end of the day, most people that I fight, the guys I respect the most, just so happen to be guys that I got to fight against, you know. Carlos Condit, you know, up to a certain point was my favorite fighter. Robbie Lawler, you know, my kids love Robbie. You know what I mean? I was a fan of Robbie. But when it comes down, it's time for that world title. Everybody going to get the smoke. And it's going to be nothing different than Kamaru Usman. If I was willing to do what I did to Robbie, who's a teammate and friend of mine, I mean, he's on the opposing team. He's on a team that got smoke with ATT. So if you think that I'm going to be nice to him, you know, I'm about to do something way different than what he thinks it's going to be. It's going to be Warner.
How is your hand? Have you been officially cleared?
You know, my hand's doing well. You know, it was a process where basically I'm going to have to rehab and train at the same time, but it's within time frame of me going. I can punch like crazy with it. Grip strength is getting there. So by the time the fight, you know, this thing is crazy. It takes a long time, then all of a sudden, boom, you know, exponentially it starts to get better. So that's why I'm there with my hand. My hand feels good. I've been training on it. So Hawaii got a chance to train with Max Bless. Max is a G, by the way. You know, such a blessing to be able to get around him. And, you know, just his mindset and his mentality just really mirrors everything that I stand for. And it's just dope to bounce around with somebody that really, you know, can vibe with you on that level.
What were you doing out there in Hawaii?
I was shooting a TV show. What wasn't I doing in Hawaii? I shot a TV show called Hawaii 5-0.
Whoa.
I recorded four songs, new songs. I finished up my album. Got an album called Chaos Theory that I wrapped up in Hawaii. I went up to Max. I said, I need a studio today. He said, oh, let me check around. So he hit his homie up, DJ Ashna. He said, I don't have nothing today. And I told my guy, because I believe in faith. I believe that God's got my back. And I said, watch, we're going to get in there tonight. And the dude hit me up and said, all right, we got to open it tonight. So we went in there. We finished up the album. We listened to it. It was dope as hell. Now we're going to mix and master it tomorrow. I recorded four new songs out there, did a music video, and fucking got down to Hawaii 5-0. So, and train with Max. So I don't fuck around.
Wow. And when does the album come out?
Album coming out. So I fight March 2nd. Album's going to come out March 4th. So it's me and my artist, T-Dub-O. Together we make Archangels. The name of the album is Chaos Theory. It's going to come out March 4th, so that Monday after the fight.
And when does the episode of Hawaii 5-0 come out?
That's going to be February 22nd. That's for Hawaii 5-0.
Look at you.
Yeah, I'm all over the place. Hawaii 5-0, I got an episode of Wildin' Out coming out. I don't know when. I did a show called Cutthroat City with me, Shamik Moore, the young god that's got all the golden gloves and this white man. So I was just with him yesterday. So we got a movie called Cutthroat City coming out, written by the RZA, Terrence Howard, Wesley Snipes, T.I. So there's a lot of stars in that movie. That should be a dope one. Should be a classic.
And so I'm assuming that the UFC set all this stuff for you, right?
Just see, I appreciate you guys for the platform you've given me to go out there and whoop ass and show people why God created me to do this damage. But when it comes down to the movies, entertainment, everything else, we know how I get it. Huh. I got it in the mud by myself this whole time. And I'm actually in the process of potentially signing with an agency so I can take these things off of my plate and then focus more on fighting and less on outside stuff.
Right. I feel like I have to ask this every time we speak. How are you with the UFC brass right now?
You know what? We're good. We got a good working business relationship right now. What I just got to recognize is that business is business, and you can't really take everything so personal all the time. And I'm not saying that it's certain things that I didn't agree with. I was able to voice those things. One thing that I think that I was able to do, had conversations with Hunter, had conversations with Hunter Campbell, is one of the people that's helping out with all the matchmaking, the lawyer, and also Dana White. It's just the fact that in this game, in this sport, it's business. You know, we got to be able to talk. We got to be able to say, hey, I could be wrong, but this is what I think. You can tell me no for myself, but I believe people want to see me fight Kobe. And I think we got to the point where we were able to have those conversations and, you know, start off 2019, because at the end of the day, like, what is the fight for? Like, do you want me to fight more? I want to fight more. Do you want me to become this superstar? I am a superstar. And, you know, I just need the opportunity to push it. I need the machine to get behind me a little bit more. And for the conversation I have, I believe that's going to happen this year. Whooping up Usman, whooping up Kobe, and then finish out with my fight at the end of the year. Shit, I think that's going to be a great year for me.
Yes.
It'll be the first time I'm up for the fighter of the year, so that's what I'm excited about.
Yes, I hope for all those things. I hope only good things, success, and perhaps a little less drama than 2018, but it is shaping up.
Too much drama.
It is lining up to
I'm
be.
I'm drama-free all year. In life, relationships, friendships, business, music, entertainment, UFC, I'm drama-free from everything. So anybody who wants drama, like I put it on my page, negativity, drama. If you're around me, you got two choices, to win or to win. Pick one. You know, I'm not about the BS this year. I'm about my business. And, you know, people in the middleway, I need to watch out too. I might slide on one of y'all by the end of the year.
Really? That's the plan?
Yeah.
Move up by the end of the year?
Why not? I mean, what better year? Wipe out the division clean, the welterweight. And go up there and either beat Fatum up again or take out Robert Whittaker. They both welterweights anyway.
Right.
Just don't know how to cut weight. So.
Damn. Way to leave us with something to chew on at the end of the interview, Tyron. I like it. I wish you the best as always. As always, thank you for squeezing us in. You're super busy. I really appreciate it. I can't thank you enough. Good luck in training camp and looking forward to seeing you out there on March 2nd, Tyron. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
You're the man. There he is, Tyron Woodley. Wow. Dropping the little nugget. End of the year. Middleweight. It is lining up very nicely for Tyron. March 2nd, then perhaps, you know, obviously win that fight, go to the Colby fight, and then, you know, he's been talking about 185 for quite some time. So That is an interesting little nugget to close things out. Okay, that's the end of the show. Quickly, I want to wrap things up here. Obviously, it's a big week right here at ESPN. It's the start of the new era. Of course, they come to me to kick things off, and I couldn't be more honored. So there you have the lineup. Again, this show is on television tomorrow night, midnight, Eastern time, 9 p.m. Pacific. This week it's on ESPN News. It says Wednesday up there, but technically it's late Tuesday night. So you got 12 a.m. this show on ESPN News. Can't wait for that. Arrow the Bad Guy on Wednesday. We've got the official weigh-in show on Friday, pre-fight show on ESPN Plus. Saturday, it's not there. Corporate Jake is holding out on me. It's not there, but 4 p.m. Put it in your calendar. This show is going on ESPN Radio, so you'll see us in digital form, television form, and radio form on Saturday, 4 p.m., and then 5 o'clock we'll have the pre-fight show on Twitter and YouTube, and then the post-fight show, and all kinds of stuff going on SportsCenter and all other places as well. So that is very exciting. Again, we're going to be on television tomorrow on ESPN News, and then we're going on the radio. I can't wait for that. It's a debut card on ESPN Plus, early prelims on ESPN Plus, then the middle of the card on ESPN television, then the main card on ESPN Plus, TJ Dillashaw versus Henry Cejudo. An actual division is on the line here, my friends. Other things before I go, Rose Namajunas is going to Brazil in May. Chael's very mad at me because of that, but I maintain that I am right. And so stay tuned. I'll talk more about that in the weeks to come. Michelle Watterson against Karolina Kowalkiewicz. That's going down in Philly. I told you about Derek Lewis versus JDS, and I also reported yesterday about AJ Agazarm, friend of the program, making his Bellator debut January 26th in Inglewood, California. But it's all about January 19th. It's all about this weekend. It's all about Brooklyn, New York. In this new studio, do I get my theme song at the end or what? What are we doing here, Jake? There it is. Okay. No, that's not the goodbye song. Okay, we'll work on that. Anyway, it was great to have our first regular show here in the new studio. Is this the goodbye song? No, yes, it is the goodbye song. Yes, my bad. I'm sorry, Jake. I'm sorry. I got very excited. It's a whole new era. Our 13th different studio. Yes, approaching our 10-year anniversary. I can't thank you enough. I can't thank everyone enough who stopped by. Thank you to all our guests. Thank you to everyone who tuned in, whether it was via Twitter or other means. And if you missed anything, check it out. iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, all those places and more. And again, replay midnight Eastern, Tuesday night on ESPN News. Back next week, same time and place. Until I say peace, I'm out of here.